My Heart Was Far Too Glad by Meister Chill. Read by Kaylin Wrights. Week 1. Draco Malfoy was happy. That may not have been obvious from the frown on his face as he hurried along Cheapside, trying to avoid stepping in puddles in his good Vans, the ones Gabe had customized for him with the black and white checkerboard and green apple print, or indeed bumping into passerbys, which was easier said than done, when he was sporting a baby bump the size of a watermelon. Morning rush hour in the city seemed to have begun extra early. But it was Friday, and Draco supposed that Londoners, be they muggles or wizards, wanted their work week over as quickly as possible, and if that meant starting a bit earlier just so they could clock off sooner than usual and begin their weekend, then fair play to them. It's just, did they all have to get in his way? He'd have much rather apparated. But of course, that wasn't a possibility. That sort of magical travel, apparating, fluing, broom-flying, and port-keying, had sadly been off the cards for the past 10 weeks. So instead, he was forced to dodge out of the way of muggles on their way to Pret for almond croissants or Greg's for bacon rolls. He'd glamoured his large belly, of course. Merlin, could you imagine the threat to the statute if a muggle spotted a 32-week pregnant man? But the bump was very much there, despite its invisibleness, and Draco could very much feel it, even if it did look like a trim, flat stomach right at that particular moment. Draco was happy, though. Sure, he grumbled a lot, and he moaned periodically, of course. That was the prerogative of the pregnant. But really, he loved it. He loved it so much. This thing growing inside him, this tiny witch or wizard that he would love and protect for its entire life. And more than anything, this feeling, this knowledge that he wouldn't ever be alone. Naturally, he was nervous, too. Bringing up a child by himself wouldn't be easy. He'd never known anyone that had been raised by a single parent. It wasn't the pure-blood way. But he had support from Mother and Blaze and Pansy, and of course Greg, though he was of little use, except possibly to do a portrait of them. One of those arty black-and-white father and baby poses, perhaps, all muscles and soft lighting. And he was nervous, too, about this antenatal class he was on his way to. His healer had emphasized the importance of first-time parents attending, and whilst he was excited to share his happiness with other expecting fathers, he worried what they might think of a former Death Eater raising a child by himself. Things had improved a great deal over the years, but he could still feel the weight of people's judgment when they saw his Malfoy hair and his black bone structure. He didn't even need to roll up his sleeve. So as he hurried past the bell tower of St. Mary Le Bow, he reminded himself firmly, he'd do anything for this baby. Anything. Draco entered the Purge and Dowse shopfront and was greeted by the antiseptic smell of St. Mungo's. He cancelled his glamour charm, and the receptionist directed him to a bright room at the end of a long corridor on the third floor. Inside, there were posters on the walls, with pictures of babies, cross-sections of anatomy, and a row of pamphlets hovering near the door with titles like Myrrh-Birthing and Baby Legitimacy. Chairs, exercise balls, and large beanbags were arranged in a haphazard semicircle, and in the center stood a tiny old man with a white beard and even whiter hair that flowed all the way down to his arse. A few other men with baby bumps of varying sizes stood around, looking sheepish and uncertain. All were flanked by their partners, some with fingers linked together in solidarity, some with hands placed protectively on shoulders. Draco froze, his heart speeding up for a few moments, before he was distracted by a soft chime.
"In you come, gents. Don't be shy," called the old man,
brandishing a small silver musical triangle.
"Sit anywhere you like. I'm Fordus McPartlin, but please call me Ford. And I'm a Magidoula. I'll be your guide to the final weeks, days, and minutes of your miraculous and extraordinary journey from pregnancy to fatherhood."
Fordus beamed widely at them as they all glanced furtively around and then took their seats. Draco opted for a chair. There was no way he'd get back up off the floor by himself if he tried a beanbag, though they did look extremely comfy. First, there was a round of introductions, which was blessedly quick. Draco couldn't have endured a long, drawn-out ice-breaking session. There were 3 gay couples and a straight couple. The very attractive Sam and Francesco introduced themselves first. It turned out that the dad-to-be, Sam, was the younger brother of Oliver Wood, and was as ruggedly handsome as his brother, albeit with a slighter build. Jericho and Lawrence were an older couple, both in their 60s and expecting their first child, having found each other later in life. They spoke so emotionally that Draco felt his eyes prickle. Neil and Langston were newlyweds, and Draco was most interested to learn that Langston was Minister Shacklebolt's nephew. Langston certainly had the same intimidatingly capable look about him, and he seemed fiercely protective of Neil. Owen and Allison were the final couple, young and cheerful and grinning, and Draco wondered why Owen was carrying rather than Allison, but they didn't offer up any explanation, and he certainly wasn't going to pry. After that, the Magidoula explained what they were going to cover over the course of the coming weeks. Moments later, Draco heard the door behind him open and close, followed by the scraping of a chair. Presumably, a latecomer arriving. He went forward a little in his chair to catch what Fortis was saying.
"As well as exploring and processing all your hopes, fears, and worries, and of course, helping you to connect with the energy of the life force growing inside you."
"Jesus," grumbled a voice from behind Draco's right shoulder. "The energy of the bloody life force?" Draco turned around as quickly as he could to shush the man, or at least scowl at him for taking the piss. But as quickly as he could was not terribly quick, and he ended up sitting sideways on the chair, needing to take it in stages. And before he knew it, the man was saying, "Jesus!" again, in a much more surprised tone, and then, "Draco sodding Malfoy! Never in a million years!" And by then, Draco had turned fully around, and found himself looking straight into the bewildered face of Harry Potter. Draco's eyes traveled down to the swollen stomach, stretching a bright orange Chudley Cannons hoodie to its limits. Not just Harry Potter, a heavily pregnant Harry Potter. And, well, Draco lost the function of speech for a few seconds.
"Bloody hell," Potter was still swearing away. "How in the name of Merlin's—" "Gentlemen," called Fortis. "If I can have your attention, I'm about to go through general healthcare pointers for wizards in their final trimester. Ah, have you two met before?"
"That's Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy," said Sam.
"Of course they've met before. They were in school together, always fighting about something."
Fortis looked between the two of them, beaming.
"How wonderful! And thank you for joining the group, Mr. Potter. But if you chaps could keep the class reunion until we break for tea and nibbles, that would be marvelous. I have quite a lot to get through."
They mumbled apologies, and Draco gave Potter a final look up and down before beginning the slow, incremental turn back to face front, legs wide as he shuffled on his bum.
Bloody Potter! How typical!
His face was as annoying as it had always been, and his hair was just as daft as usual, even pulled back as it was into a messy ponytail. But his eyes? Fuck, Draco had forgotten how fierce those green eyes were. It was a real pity the man was just as obnoxious as he'd always been, because he really was looking incredible. Draco supposed he was one of those pricks who glowed when pregnant. And hang on, he thought belatedly. Harry Potter? Pregnant? How had he not heard about this? The man was in the news every other week, usually having been snapped at a posh function, or stumbling out of a club with some beau or other. But, thinking about it now, he'd not seen much coverage of Potter in the last few months, because there'd be no hiding that swollen abdomen. Was Potter trying to keep it quiet? And secondly, Potter was a half-blood. As far as Draco knew, the gene for predisposition to male pregnancy ran in purebloods only. Draco shook his head and sighed, not even the least bit surprised that Potter was of bloody course the exception to that. If there was a rule to be broken or a trend to be bucked, Potter would be the one to do it. Draco furrowed his brow and tried to focus on the discussion about healthy eating and exercise, and Fortis's impressive demo of yoga squats and lunges, instead of succumbing to his age-old hyperfixation on Potter.
but it was rather difficult to concentrate, with the tuts and sighs coming from behind his right shoulder. Merlin, what was Potter even doing here if he didn't want to listen? Draco took as deep a breath as he could, and resolved not to let a clearly grumpy Potter ruin his happy mood. However, his period of tranquility was short-lived, because at the break, Potter cornered him.
Malfoy, he said. What are you doing here?
Draco put his cup down and looked at Potter in disbelief.
I'd have thought that was perfectly obvious, he said, gesturing at his stomach.
Yeah, sorry, Potter grimaced. I'm just surprised. You, up the duff, it just seems.
What?
Draco scowled.
Not how I ever imagined you? I don't know.
Potter shrugged. Draco was sure there was an insult in there, though he felt a little zip of satisfaction that Potter had been imagining him at all. Potter poured himself some rooibos tea, then cleared his throat.
So, when are you due?
Oh. Draco relaxed his scowl. Apparently they were going to attempt a civil conversation.
In 8 weeks. 31st of July.
Merlin, no way. On my birthday? That's such a coincidence.
Yes, I suppose so.
Harry looked thrilled about it. Draco didn't know why that irritated him so much, but it did. He didn't know why people put so much stock in birthdays anyway. They were nothing but a meaningless milestone of decay.
I'm the 5th of August. How mental we're 5 days apart.
Indeed.
Draco bit into a cereal bar.
It was very oaty. He'd have much preferred a bar of dairy milk.
Potter blew across the surface of his tea and then took a noisy slurp. You having a boy or a girl?
I don't know. I wanted it to be a surprise.
Same. Though Molly's sure it's a boy from the way I'm carrying. She's driving me crazy. Keeps coming over with knitted blue things. Hats and booties and all sorts.
You'd better hope for a boy, Draco said. A girl with a face like yours, Potter? That would be just cruel.
Draco wasn't sure why he was being like this. He was better than this now. Potter just always brought it out in him. But surprisingly, Potter laughed out loud at the jibe, so Draco decided to carry on.
My daughter, on the other hand, would be pretty like me.
That's fair. You'll have to keep her locked up until she's 17, if she's anywhere as pretty as you. Draco was at a loss to respond to that unexpected compliment. He was wondering if perhaps Potter wasn't quite as obnoxious as he remembered.
So you're here alone? Potter mused. Is there, anyone? Yes, well observed, Draco snapped. I'm going to be a single parent. What of it?
Draco was trying to keep his voice calm, but he felt something achy forming in his chest.
You're alone, too. I suppose your partner couldn't make it today.
Actually, I'm single, too. Draco could barely hide his surprise, and it manifested as a small squeak. He coughed to hide it, and Potter smiled.
So what happened? If you expect me to share all the details of my personal life with someone I've barely seen for 8 years...
Suit yourself, Malfoy. But we're going to be seeing each other here every week until we give birth. No point being unfriendly.
Besides, it's not good for the babies, he added piously. Just ask Ford.
Salazar, Potter was right. Draco didn't know why he felt incapable of being pleasant. He really should try for the sake of the baby.
He took a calming breath.
We broke up, he admitted. Not long after we discovered I was pregnant.
He grimaced as the baby chose that moment to squirm around in his belly.
It was that Gabriel guy, wasn't it? The model? I saw pictures of the two of you in some paper or magazine a while back. He was hot.
Potter fanned himself with his hand.
Yes, thank you, Potter. I'm aware of how handsome he is. He is a model, after all.
I'm sorry that it didn't work out.
If you ever want... The Magidoula's voice interrupted them.
Right, fellows, back to your seats or your cushions. I have some slides to go through on hypnobirthing.
Potter groaned as they took their seats again, while Draco withdrew some parchment from his shoulder bag to take notes. Class finished at midday,
and Draco made his way to Sense and Sensibility, the small shop on Horizont Alley, where he worked as a charms developer. He couldn't wait to tell Swada, his boss, and Augustus, the front-of-house assistant, about Harry Potter being in the family way. They loved a bit of gossip, and he was sure their speculation about every little detail surrounding the Savior's pregnancy would keep him entertained for the entire afternoon. But when he got there, Augustus started in straight away on a story about a customer complaint. Someone allergic to bergamot oil, only one of the most common top notes in perfumes for Merlin's sake, had come in with scaly pustules all over their neck. And then Swada began briefing him on the contract she'd just negotiated with Joe Malone, and by the time he left for home that evening, he realized he'd quite forgotten to mention a single thing about Potter, which was very unlike him. Week 2. When Draco arrived at antenatal class the following week, Potter was already in the room and chatting animatedly to Neil and Langston. Langston cut quite a swashbuckling figure in a billowy white shirt and knee-high leather boots, and Draco didn't miss Potter surreptitiously glancing at the bit of chest hair on display as he talked. Draco remembered that both Potter and Langston worked at the Ministry. Langston was on the Invisibility Task Force, and Potter trained Aurors. And thinking of work, Draco realized he still hadn't told his colleagues, or anyone for that matter, about Potter having a baby, and a whole week had already gone by. How odd. Potter looked up just as Draco was about to sit near the window, and with a waving arm, the twerp beckoned for him to come over. "I've saved you a seat here," he said cheerily, pointing to the chair next to him. "But I..." Draco began. He had nothing against sitting with Potter, on principle, but he was feeling hesitant anyway. All right, maybe he was a little against it on principle. The thing was, he didn't want to set a precedent. It would mean they'd have to sit together every week. "Ford said we're going to be doing an exercise in pairs, so it makes sense for us two singletons to pair up." "Right," Draco sighed. "I can't argue with that logic, I suppose." He greeted the three men and took his seat. After a short talk about heartburn, piles, and Braxton Hicks, which was useful in terms of a few treatments Draco hadn't thought of, though he could have done without a couple of the fathers-to-be sharing personal stories, that Draco very much felt came under the TMI umbrella, Fortis explained what their exercise would be. It turned out to be a heart-to-heart with your partner, and even Draco groaned this time at the prospect, though not as loud as Potter.
"Pregnancy can cause many changes to a man's body, as you well know. Your partner may feel insecure, or need reassurance about how his body looks. On top of that, sexual desire during pregnancy varies from man to man. Your pregnant partner may be less interested in sex, or more interested. Discuss this in your pairs, and remember to both be open and receptive to how each other feels about this."
"Oh, God," said Potter. "No way," said Draco. "I refuse to. I simply can't."
He didn't finish the sentence. He was too horrified. Draco did not want to share with anyone, and especially not Potter, the fact that since becoming pregnant, he'd been randier than a centaur with Mars in Capricorn.
"Maybe we can sit this one out?"
"Unlikely," Draco said, glancing at Fortis's expectant face. The man was strolling around the room, clearly planning to eavesdrop on all the conversations. He remembered his vow to himself, the one he repeated in his head every morning while doing his shaving charms, to do everything he could to ensure this baby had the best start in life. He couldn't quite imagine how talking to Potter about sexual desire was going to help, though. Maybe he could speak to Fortis about it? Maybe he'd allow... "Ugh, let's just get on with it," Potter blurted, and Draco didn't miss the wide blush that had appeared across his cheeks.
"We could start with the body image part? Don't know about you, but I think I look completely ridiculous."
Draco couldn't help his gaze falling to Harry's body, his legs splayed out, displaying the swell of his bump, his hand resting slightly at the base of his abdomen. A strange emotion overcame him at the thought of the tiny baby within.
You're fine," Draco said. "I look like I swallowed a bloody quaffle." "That's what you're supposed to look like when you're heavily pregnant. That's what we all look like in here. Ugh, well, except for that bloke Sam." Draco narrowed his eyes.
How is he so neat?
Right, said Potter. Bit sus. The bastard's probably not pregnant at all. Betty's just got bad gas.
Draco snorted.
That would be a nasty surprise for the healer on delivery day. 9 months of built-up wind.
Potter laughed delightedly, causing several heads to turn and shoot them filthy looks. Lawrence looked particularly annoyed, and Draco could see that Jericho's cheeks were wet with tears.
Bugger. We'd better keep it down a bit, Draco leaned towards Potter to whisper. We're supposed to be taking this very seriously.
Potter giggled at that, and Draco felt warm. He cleared his throat.
So, my turn. Yes, I'm huge. Yes, I have stretch marks. And yes, I'm tired all the time, and I hurt in strange places. But I sort of love it. I love my round belly, how it looks, how it feels, rubbing apricot oil or cocoa butter into my skin. I don't know, it makes me happy. Is that odd?
Potter said nothing, just looked at Draco, at Draco's body, a strange expression on his face. Bemused, maybe?
Very odd,
Potter said, finally, and Draco felt stung. He'd known it would be a bad idea to open up like this, to Potter, of all people. Potter coughed.
Jesus, Malfoy, you know, you've changed a lot.
Clearly, Draco replied, curling a protective arm around his stomach. But I thought we were trying to be open and receptive here. Not really fair to be so critical of my appearance. I'm growing a baby here.
What? No, bloody hell. I meant changed as in your, I don't know, not such a prick.
Oh, thank you so very,
you're different now.
Still prickish a bit.
Prickly? But different. That's what's odd. Not odd you liking your belly, that's, well, that's understandable. It actually does suit you. How's that for open and receptive?
Draco cleared his throat.
Oh, well, all right then. And you also look well. Quite radiant, actually.
Radiant?
Potter's eyes crinkled with the beginnings of laughter.
Your skin, it's sort of dewy and...
Oh, fuck off!
Draco scowled at Potter's amused reaction.
What?
Potter gave in to the laughter, and Draco narrowed his eyes.
One thing's for certain, I'm 100% not discussing sexual matters with you. You can't seem to take a thing seriously. In fact, I'm not even sure why you bother to attend.
In truth, Draco was glad for any excuse not to share. Potter didn't need to hear about how his sex life consisted of solitary, masturbatory efforts, or about how much planning and positioning was required to be able to reach for long enough to get the deed done, as it were, and how in the last month he'd had to give up entirely and was just in a constant low-level state of near arousal, something to do with the increased blood flow to that area, and Merlin, the sheer number of blokes in jogging bottoms and yoga pants these days, did not help one bit. With little hope of release. He loved being heavy with child, but it did have its downsides.
I'm sorry, I'll be good.
Potter hung his head, though he was clearly biting back a smile.
I suppose I'm here because I haven't a clue what I'm doing. Hermione's given me books, but I've never been much of a theory sort of guy. It's just...
He shrugged. I don't know.
Okay, I'll stay on track. Sex? I'm off it for life. Never doing that again. Never, never, never. Had my fair share, and look where it got me.
And to Draco's astonishment, Potter pulled his t-shirt right up, exposing an expanse of shiny, bronze skin, with a thick line of dark hair along his linea nigra, all the way from his protruding belly button down, and disappearing under the waistband of his black leggings. Draco's mouth instantly became wet with saliva. This was exactly what he meant about men in stretchy sporting attire.
Dangerous business,
Potter added, and gave the hair on his belly a good scratch for a moment before covering up again. Draco pulled himself together, absently scratching his own stomach, too.
It certainly does seem like you've had your share of paramours, if the prophet and witch weekly are anything to go by. but swearing off it for the rest of your life seems a little extreme. You do know how long wizards live for, don't you?
Potter's eyes widened, realization dawning. Draco smirked.
I do hope your hands are up to the job of keeping you satisfied for the next 100 years.
Potter shifted in his chair and flexed his fingers, looking down at them. They looked strong and sturdy, and Draco had to look away.
I may not have thought that decision through fully, though I reckon these hands will be full enough once the baby comes. I can't imagine I'll have all that much time to meet blokes, at least not until Junior heads off to Hogwarts.
Yes, well, there's a thought.
Draco wondered the same sometimes, whether he'd ever find love again.
I hear it's troublesome enough getting back into any kind of normal sex life when you have a new baby and a partner, so it's probably nigh on impossible when you're single.
Maybe we'll both be DILFs, eh?
What in Merlin's name is a DILF?
It stands for Dad I'd Like to Fuck, said Potter, grinning.
Dear Salazar.
Draco found he quite liked the way that Potter had said fuck, with just that little bit of aggressive emphasis, but he pushed that thought away.
Well, I'll be going by father, so that won't apply.
All right, so that will make you a filth.
That is not better, Potter laughed.
Sounds like a Londoner saying filth.
Though maybe that could work, depending on the types you want to attract.
Oh, do piss off, Potter.
And Draco couldn't help laughing, too. Fortunately, Fordus called the activity to a halt. But unfortunately, couples were then asked to relay any important revelations to the group. Draco soon remembered why he hated activities like this, as Potter told everyone about how wonderful it was that Draco loved his bump. That evening, Draco stood naked in front of the bathroom mirror, stroking the gentle swell of his belly. It was beautiful, he thought. Never mind the fact that he was losing fat everywhere else except for his feet and hands, which right now looked like giant flobber worms. Never mind the fact that he was pale and there were dark circles under his eyes. Never mind the fact that he didn't have a someone to stand by him proudly, or indeed to drool over the line of blonde hair leading down his stomach. There was a tiny person inside him, growing and almost ready to meet the world, and he reminded himself that was all that mattered. Week 3.
Pregnancy brings a lot of emotional change, Fordus announced.
Draco had been paired up with Potter yet again.
You are becoming a parent for the first time, and your hormone levels are changing. It's a lot to process. I want you to talk to each other about your hopes and fears. What do you want for your baby? What's important to you as you become a new family? Talk about the things that you are looking forward to with the new baby, and the things that you're worried about.
Salazar, Draco thought. This was going to be excruciating. Potter slumped his shoulders, sighed, and then straightened his posture again.
Here we go again.
Draco echoed Potter's sigh, but he reminded himself he really wanted to get the most out of these classes. Merlin knew he needed all the help he could get.
Let's just get on with it,
Draco said, adjusting his position on the large green exercise ball he was sitting on. They'd been short on normal chairs this week, and though Draco found sitting on a large ball rather humiliating, he couldn't deny they were extremely comfortable. He just had to keep alert so he didn't roll off the thing.
Yeah, all right.
Potter sat up a bit straighter and ran a hand through his dark curls.
So, what sort of parent do you want to be? What do you want for your kid?
Did he really have to tell Potter this?
Do it for the baby, a little voice in his head said.
He steeled himself and spoke.
I wish for my child to have a different upbringing than I had. I want them to be free to do the things they want to do, and be the person they want to be.
I was always under the impression that your parents let you have everything you wanted.
Things, Potter. They gave me the things I wanted. It's not the same. Don't get me wrong, I had a charmed childhood. Toys and sweets and elves doing my bidding, and Princess Kitty Sunshine, but...
Princess Kitty Sunshine? What in Hades is that?
My cat, Potter. Well, mother's cat now, which is for the best all around. It's a long story, and I don't like talking about it. What I'm trying to say is... Okay, we are definitely coming back to that. But Malfoy, your mother... She loved you.
Yes, yes, of course.
Draco sighed and bounced gently on his ball.
What I'm saying is, I want to be the sort of parent that allows their child to be themselves, to be who they are, and one who doesn't try to impose their ambitions on them. Well, not too much, at least. Encourage them, but not stifle them, I suppose. I don't know how good I'll be at that. I just want them to be freer to do what they want. Freer than I was as a child.
I think... Yeah, I see what you mean. Your parents did seem a tad controlling. And as long as you try, then I reckon, actually, you totally could be that kind of supportive dad. Draco's cheeks warmed.
Obviously, I won't be completely permissive. Any child of mine should be mannerly and respectful. What about you?
Potter folded his arms and rested them on his bump.
Same.
Same? What? Mannerly and respectful?
No, Potter laughed. Well, yeah, a bit. But I meant, I too want my kid to have a different sort of childhood to the one I had. No doubt you've heard about my less-than-loving aunt and uncle.
Well, yes, I've read the stories. There was mention of a cupboard? That was an exaggeration by Rita Skeeter, though, surely.
Nope, no exaggeration. The cupboard was grim. Freezing in winter and stiflingly hot in summer, and delightfully spidery all year round. But thankfully, I upgraded to a bedroom after I got my Hogwarts letter. The bars they installed on the windows were a lovely additional touch, I thought. Really pulled the room together.
Merlin, Draco said, monotone. That is grim. And then you spent your Hogwarts years trying to avoid death by Gryffindoring.
That part was brilliant, actually, being in Gryffindor. Though, point of clarification, it was actually death by Voldemort that I was actively trying to minimize. And hexing by Slytherins the rest of the time.
Well, you deserved that part. You were an insufferable, self-righteous prat. Although, I might not have been so cruel had I known about your upbringing.
Don't be daft. You'd have milked it. You'd have locked me in Filch's broom cupboard and been all, just trying to make you feel at home, Potty. I'll let you out in the morning so you can go to the kitchens and cook all our breakfasts.
Draco winced. Potter was right.
Yes, well, point of clarification, I would have probably called you Scarhead, but yes, that does sound like me.
He paused, then added,
sorry.
Potter just laughed, the soft-headed pillock, and Draco smiled back and realized he was getting a little bit fond of him. Later, after a practical demonstration of how to feed your baby and a discussion about what potions were suitable for reflux, Fortis advised them that he had a bit of homework for them. The topic was Patronuses. Apparently, not only could your corporeal Patronus guard your baby from dangers while you were not in the room, Draco had already known that, but some bright wizarding parent had recently discovered that you could also use your Patronus in its non-corporeal form to calm and soothe a distressed or colicky baby, and it had apparently caught on like fiend fire in parent and baby circles. The misty Patronus form would surround the baby and imbue it with all the positive energy of the happy memory that created it. Potter had raised a dubious eyebrow at that, but Draco thought it sounded wonderful.
So, your homework is to practice carefully enveloping something, a doll, a plant, even a pet, in your Patronus. Non-corporeal, remember. It won't do to shoot a panther or an eagle at the poor thing, so that you'll be able to do it without a second thought once the baby comes.
Like Draco said to Potter, it all sounded wonderful. There was just one small problem. Draco had never managed to cast a Patronus. Not even the tiniest wisp of one. It had always bothered him, obviously. But it hadn't been the slightest bit necessary for his work at Sense and Sensibility, so he had learned to just accept that he was never able to do it. But now it was of vital importance to Draco. A knot of worry rose in his chest. He had 5 weeks before the baby was due, so he would just have to practice, practice, practice. He'd read all the theory that existed on the subject, even spending a day in the manor library searching for inspiration. and he'd tried so many memories, from his childhood, from Hogwarts, but nothing worked. More than once, he'd wondered if it was just impossible for a Death Eater, even a reformed one, to cast the spell properly. Whatever the reason was, he was now determined to find a way. Draco walked home that afternoon via a different route to try to invigorate his mind, which had felt dull ever since Fortis had begun talking about Patronuses. Here and there along his walk, bits of the old Roman wall of London, mossy brick ruins and restored medieval arches, could be seen peeking out between tall glass office blocks and rusty brick warehouses, and Draco admired the way the Muggles embraced the coexistence of the ancient and the strikingly modern. By the time he reached his flat on Brick Lane, he was feeling more positive. He did love his little flat. Well, it wasn't really that little, and it wasn't really his. But Gabriel had felt guilty for leaving him at 6 weeks pregnant for that tart Agnes Dane, a female Mancunian version of Draco as far as he could tell from the few times he'd met her at runway shows, or that one time they'd bumped into her browsing the stalls on Petticoat Lane, same hair and build and everything. And Gabe had told Draco to just keep it. Apparently he was more than happy to move into Agnes's swanky loft in Shoreditch. So it had all worked out, Draco supposed, as he waddled in his bare feet into his bright open-plan kitchen and living room. After a dinner of cheesy pasta, Draco was addicted to cheese on everything these days. It had tipped over from a craving to a dependency at this point. And a warm bath infused with a few drops of mood-lifting geranium and wild orange oils, Draco changed into his comfiest pajamas, made himself a cup of lemon balm tea, and sat in an armchair, ready to practice. He called on a memory from his birthday last year, when he and Gabriel had been happy, really happy. Gabe had organized a party and invited Greg and Pansy and Blaze, and thankfully none of his own high fashion friends. And they'd had the best time, eating cake and drinking Pimm's on the rooftop patio and bitching about work. He had fussed over Draco all evening, topping up his drink, touching his wrist, tucking wayward strands of hair behind his ear.
"Expecto Patronum," he called out firmly,
doing the requisite circular motion with his wand. The tip glowed a pale blue and hissed a little, but as he feared, nothing issued forth from it. He tried another memory, whizzing through the air, his Quidditch robe snapping against his thighs, and finally, finally closing his hand around the fluttering snitch to beat Gryffindor. But that failed too. His enthusiasm was fast waning. He didn't know what he was doing wrong. Almost everyone he knew could cast a Patronus at this stage. His friends had all picked it up over the years. Blaze's silvery owl, Pansy's elegant antelope, Theo's playful squirrel. Even Greg had managed it, though it had taken much longer than the others. It wasn't as strong as theirs either, but he'd managed to cast his shimmery king crab a couple of times when it had been required. The first time he'd done it, his face had fallen at its form, but he'd quickly gathered himself at everyone's insistence that Vince would have laughed his head off about it. But not Draco. He'd tried and tried to successfully cast the spell, and that's what led him to speculate that his choice to take the mark at 16 years of age had doomed him to a Patronus-free existence. Taking a deep breath, he called up a third memory, a gorgeous day in Diagon Alley, sweeping from shop to shop, mother buying him only the best. He'd been certain he'd be the most popular boy in Hogwarts, and spent the day picking out all sorts of beautiful items as befitted such a princely status, from high-quality quills, ink, and parchment, to a copper cauldron and weighing scales, to robes in the most luxurious fabric with built-in cleaning charms. The afternoon had ended splendidly, too, with a triple fudge sundae at Fortescue's, with the chocolate sauce on the side, of course, just as he liked it. But even as he said the incantation, he knew it wasn't going to work. And he was right. Not even a hiss this time. He felt tears well in his eyes. Merlin cursed these baby hormones. He never usually cried over anything. And then, as always, came the guilt for thinking ill about his pregnancy. He went to bed deflated. Deflated and alone. He pulled the duvet around him, hugging it, and in seconds felt hot and uncomfortable, and had to move position,
which was easier said than done. Once settled, he consoled himself with the fact that in 5 more weeks he'd meet the little son or daughter that he'd created, and his heart would be full again. Week 4.
All right, gentlemen, it's time to demonstrate your Patronus baby care charms on this cute little dolly here. Neil, why don't you go first?
Fordis had charmed a baby doll to cry and fuss, and the group watched while Neil cast a perfect wispy Patronus over the doll, which curled around its tiny torso, and the doll quietened within seconds.
Bloody show-off, Draco thought.
Owen was up next, and he had difficulty keeping his Patronus non-corporeal. It seemed to want to stubbornly remain as a boa constrictor, which had everyone sucking their teeth in concern. When it began wrapping itself tightly around the babe, Fordis stepped in with a diplomatic,
"Excellent work, Owen, though could benefit from some slight finessing."
Draco exchanged a glance with Potter, who was snickering behind his hand. Next up was Potter, and Draco didn't even need to watch. Of bloody course he'd do it perfectly. After the display, Potter definitely seemed much more open-minded and a lot less sneery, and actually clapped the efforts of both Jericho and Sam. Draco had been allowing others to go before him, ostensibly being magnanimous, though in actuality just stalling for time. Just before it came to his turn, he excused himself to use the loo. "But you're up next," Potter reminded him.
"I'm aware of that, thank you, but the baby is using my bladder as a squeeze toy right now. I'll just be a minute."
While relieving himself, and it was nerves as much as a constricted bladder, Draco tried to come up with a happy memory he could use. But he'd tried so many, he simply couldn't think of a new one. He shook himself off, tucked himself away, and retied the drawstring on his tracksuit bottoms. He'd finally given in to slouchy joggers in the last few weeks. Transfiguration spells on his normal jeans and trousers just weren't cutting it anymore. They'd inevitably be too uncomfortable, and he'd be forced to adjust the spell to loosen them, and then they'd slip down his hips as he walked. That, and, well, he couldn't see past his bump to button up trousers any longer. It was bad enough having to feel around for his dick when he needed a pee, and then get the aim right. In the end, he decided just to choose a memory he'd used before, and hope for the best. Either way, he was undoubtedly going to badly embarrass himself, and in front of Patronus prodigy Potter to boot. Back in the classroom, he focused on his mother's face, proud and domineering, as she instructed Madame Malkin as to what fabrics to use, vicuña wool for winter robes and mulberry silk for summer. They all looked lush and brilliant, and Draco had felt just as brilliant and awfully proud as he was measured up for them. But just as Draco uttered expecto patronum, a scruffy, eager-eyed boy entered his memory, and he faltered on the last syllable. In his memory, his heart had leapt at the sight of the boy. But here, now, in this room, his heart dropped with the weight of knowledge that his younger self had been innocent of. How badly he'd fucked up their first interactions, and all that had followed thereafter. Of course, so too faltered his spell. There was simply no hope for it. And it struck him, as Fordis gave a sympathetic, "Ah!" and the rest of the room sucked their teeth in dismay, that actually all his memories were tainted with something unhappy. The party that Gabe threw him, the same Gabe who dumped him, and that the memory of catching the snitch, because it wasn't against Gryffindor at all, was it? It was Hufflepuff. He'd never won against Gryffindor, never beaten Harry Potter.
"Would you like to try again?"
asked Fordis, but Draco shook his head, not meeting the man's eyes. He did glance at Potter momentarily, though, and his face heated in shame as he saw sympathy there. Draco grit his teeth to stop the tears of frustration from springing to his eyes. A hand squeezed his forearm. "Potter." Draco supposed it was meant as a comforting gesture, but Draco hated it. Hated it.
"It does look like you'll need to practice that one a little more, Draco,"
Fordis said in a kindly, encouraging tone, which Draco hated too, though it caused Potter to remove his hand, so that was something.
"Don't forget to think of your happiest memory."
Draco tried to smile and nod, though it can't have looked natural with his jaw clenched so tight. They took a break after that,
and Draco tried to avoid talking to anyone, eschewing the selection of rice cakes on offer, and opting to take his cup of tea to the window and look out over the city. He could easily spot the iconic structures of the Gherkin and Tower Bridge, and looking across the river, the strikingly raw and industrial Tate Modern building. He could see, too, quite a few green spaces breaking up the gray and silver of the city, and began to think about how nice it would be going for walks with the pram through the various parks dotted around the place, strolling around Stepney Green and Haggerston, and maybe feeding the ducks in Mile End Park. Hopefully they'd get a good summer. It had been a pretty rainy June. "I get irritated sometimes with all this parenting advice," came a voice from Draco's right. Potter, of course. He could never leave well enough alone. "At the weekend, Neville and Hannah told me how you learn so much when you have a baby, like how to survive on 3 hours sleep a night. I snapped and told them I'd learned all I bloody well needed of that, keeping watch for snatchers in the Forest of Dean, thank you very much." He shook his head regretfully. "Hannah got so upset then, and I felt like a right shit." "I wouldn't worry. She'll surely remember that pregnant people get a bit ratty from time to time. It's the hormones." "So many sodding hormones. I'm a hormone soup, and a salty one at that."
"Bitter, too, by the sounds of it," Draco quipped.
"Very." Potter grinned and bit into a rice cake. It looked dry. Draco sighed.
"I know why you're telling me this."
Potter swallowed down his dry mouthful and then took a quick sip of pumpkin juice.
"Ah, do you?
Can I ask?"
"You want to know why I couldn't cast earlier?"
It wasn't a question.
"Not want to know why, just thought I'd offer help if you needed it or wanted it. But I understand if you don't. Like I said, people offering unwanted help and advice is something I can relate to."
"You can't stop yourself, can you?"
Draco scowled.
"Always have to be good at everything and think you can fix everyone's problems."
"I'm sorry, I shouldn't have assumed..."
"No, no, I'm sorry. Ugh, these hormones again. I'm as snappish as a teenage horntail some days."
"What are we like?" Potter chuckled. "Two knocked up and cranky single blokes trying to figure shit out. It's tragic, really."
He vanished the rest of the rice cake. Draco didn't blame him.
"Can I ask?" Draco started, and then thought better of it.
"Actually, no, nothing."
"Ask what?"
"Never mind, it was... no, it's prying."
"What? Just ask. Bloody hell, Malfoy."
"Well, I just wondered who the father is."
Draco gestured unnecessarily at Potter's belly. Potter grimaced and looked away. Draco panicked. He shouldn't have asked, he thought. It was too intrusive, and Potter was clearly trying to keep things hush-hush. But Draco had been wondering, quite a bit, why he'd heard nothing about Potter dating anyone, not to mention getting pregnant. He could usually rely on Pansy for the up-to-the-minute gossip.
"Thing is," Potter leaned in to whisper, and Draco gasped as the side of Potter's bump pressed into Draco's, warm and firm. "Just between us. Well, and my close friends, obviously. I'm not actually 100% sure who the other dad is."
Draco gasped again, shocked, and whispered back.
You don't know who impregnated you? Weren't you there at the time? I mean, of course you were. Or, wait, was it a sperm donor?"
Potter laughed, and his belly jiggled against Draco's.
"Nah, I was definitely there when it happened. I just, well, I had a few partners around that time, and,
Draco was feeling better already. This was a scandal, and he was all ears.
"I see. Men you met at a certain club in the basement of the Hopping Pot, perhaps?"
Potter eyed him sheepishly.
"You do read the papers, then?"
"Occasionally. Plus, I've actually seen you there once or twice. You're a good dancer."
Draco cringed. Why did he have to add that last part? Now Potter would know he'd watched him gyrating with men on the dance floor.
"You've been to the Silken Glove? I've never seen you there."
"Used to go, once upon a time. And I'd glamour up."
Draco swallowed.
"Gabe, he didn't like to be spotted with..."
"Oh, yeah, of course. He's a celeb.
although I'm sure I saw him there a few times.
You may have. It was only me who wore the disguise. He's a muggle, so unable to cast a glamour, obviously.
Also, Draco paused, embarrassed. He said it didn't give off the right look for him to be seen out with a Malfoy. He's read up on his wizarding culture and history, you see. Wanted to be successful in both the muggle and wizarding fashion worlds. And, to be fair, people were always photographing him. So many wizards have muggle phones these days.
That's not very bloody fair on you, though, Potter said. But he was interrupted by a chiming sound.
Oh, bugger, we're being called to go back.
As Fordus described the various pain potions and charm options for labor, Draco thought some more about what Potter had said. If no one else had been able to help him with his Patronus charm up to this point, what difference could Potter possibly make? But at the same time, he was Harry Potter, renowned for making the impossible possible, apart from taming his hair. And didn't he teach that group of fifth-years how to cast the spell? Even Weasley and Longbottom, who were usually hopeless at charms? By the end of class, Draco decided it had to be worth a try, and that he'd swallow his pride and take Potter up on his offer. Draco caught up to Potter as he was getting into the lift with a few others to go down to reception. He slid into the lift sideways just as the doors were closing. Thankfully, they didn't close on his bump.
"Cutting it fine there, Draco," said Allison, smiling.
"Didn't want to have to take the stairs," Draco replied, returning her smile. "Otherwise, I'd have to collapse on a plastic chair in reception, too feeble to tackle the walk home."
"Oh, I hear you. I'm actually wondering whether to start bringing the baby's buggy we bought to class, so that I can push Owen home in it. He's always shattered and crabby by the end of the day."
"Oi, I'm standing right here," Owen laughed. "And you try walking a mile in ankles this swollen."
Potter laughed too.
"Sounds like someone's angling for a foot rub."
"Harry, don't give him ideas," Allison laughed.
"Merlin, what I wouldn't give for a foot rub," Draco groaned.
"Draco," exclaimed Owen, "don't give Allison ideas."
Allison cackled at that, and then the doors opened and they all piled out into reception.
"Potter, do you have a moment?"
Draco said, and Potter stopped walking and turned to him.
"Sure do,"
he said, giving Draco a big and frankly beautiful smile. They said goodbye to Owen and Allison, and Draco couldn't have sworn it, but it looked like Allison winked at Potter.
"The offer you made earlier, to help me with my Patronus casting, does that still stand?"
"Of course," Potter nodded. "I'd be happy to."
Now? Here? "How about tomorrow, if you're free at any point? Though you're probably busy,
Tomorrow's fine. I have a thing at lunchtime, but I could meet you in the afternoon. Do you want to come over to mine? Say 3 o'clock?
Draco hadn't really thought about where they might practice. Did he want to go to Potter's place? It seemed surreal that Potter would want him calling over, like a friend popping round. However, he was curious to see where the golden boy of the wizarding world lived. He imagined it would be a cross between student digs and the Gryffindor common room.
"Very well, then," he said.
Potter beamed and gave him the details. Potter's house was exactly like he expected. Maroon sofa, squashy ochre-colored cushions, and Quidditch posters hanging in the bloody sitting room, cannons and harpies pennants above the fireplace, a strange shard of broken mirror on the mantelpiece, and a mid-play chess game on the coffee table alongside what looked like a stack of library books. A corkboard in the kitchen was littered with pinned takeaway flyers and concert tickets and photos of Weasleys, and he even recognized a few of young Teddy, too. More photos and knick-knacks adorned the fridge. The place was cluttered, which was unsurprising to Draco. But something was odd. Draco looked around again as Potter cleared up some unwashed plates and cutlery from the table. Then he realized what it was. There were no indications whatsoever that Potter was about to have a baby in a matter of weeks. Not a buggy, not a baby grow, not a cuddly stuffed gnome or dragon to be seen. And it made him wonder. Potter had chosen to have this baby, but he didn't seem overly invested in the classes. He grumbled a lot, and he didn't seem to have a house fit for raising a child. It was puzzling.
"Let's get started, shall we?"
Potter chirped. Then have a cuppa. I know I tend to just sit and chat and do fuck all useful if I come in and have tea straight away, so best leave that till after.
Okay, that sounds fine.
So, I imagine you know the basics. Happy memory, incantation, wand movement. Where do you think you have issues? And can you cast a Patronus some of the time and not others, or not at all?
Not at all, Draco admitted.
And it mortified him quite a bit to lay out his shortcomings like this, especially to Potter. But he'd learnt over the years that humble pie only tasted bitter on the first bite.
And yes, I know what to do. The theory I know only too well.
He thought of the hours he'd spent researching and researching.
It's just the execution I can't seem to get right. I actually think that I struggle to...
Draco trailed off, not sure how to phrase it, and still not sure if he wanted to bear all to Potter.
Struggle to... Potter prompted after a few moments. I think the memories I call up are all... tainted? As in, happy at the time, but looking back they make me sad, too. In context.
Ah, I suppose that could make it harder, yeah. Potter twirled his wand in his fingers. So, we find you a properly happy memory.
Oh, easy as that, eh? Draco grumbled. I've bloody well tried.
Just needs to be a single moment of pure joy. Surely you must have at least one of those. You were a pampered brat.
Rude, but accurate.
Draco thought and thought. Eventually, he settled on his 11th birthday. Presents, cake, friends, and his Hogwarts letter flying in by owl. It was the perfect day. He focused on the feeling of opening the parchment and seeing the Hogwarts crest.
Got it.
Right. Really channel that feeling. And cast, firm and clear. Draco squeezed his eyes shut to concentrate.
Expecto Patronum, he said, clear as a bell, and opened his eyes.
He looked at Potter, who had a bright, false smile on his face.
Didn't work, did it?
There was a little fizzle. It's a start. Maybe keep your eyes open next time? Draco's shoulders slumped. Why did he think it would make any difference if Potter was there? He wasn't telling Draco anything he didn't already know. Draco tried several more times, but it was no good. He loved that memory. He decided to be open with Potter.
I did wonder if it might be because, well, because of my past allegiance to you-know-who.
Potter's eyes widened, and he flicked his gaze to Draco's left arm. You think the mark is preventing you? No, that can't be. Potter was shaking his head. Snape. Snape had the mark, and he could cast a proper corporeal Patronus. It was a doe.
Oh, said Draco.
A large part of him was gutted at the realization that it was quite obviously a him problem and not a Death Eater problem. Potter wondered if it was something about Draco's wand and gave it a test with a couple of simple spells, Lumos and Leviosa, and then, of course, a perfectly executed Patronus. He handed the wand back to Draco, and their fingers brushed. Potter let the touch linger for a moment, and then pulled his hand back and looked at it.
Maybe if I hold the wand with you, he said. What? I'm not a child. I don't need my hand held.
No, I mean, maybe I'll be able to feel the magic and, deduce what's going on.
All right then.
And Draco let him curl his fingers around his hand and said nothing when the side of Potter's bump pressed into his back. Draco caught the smell of neroli and vetiver, and he smiled. Potter was wearing a scent Draco had created. Animus. Well, well. He didn't know what to think about that. It smelled good on him, though.
Off you go, then.
And Draco was just about to say the incantation when he felt a jerky movement from Potter's stomach.
Oof, sorry, you probably felt that. Merlin, that was a hard kick.
Potter's baby. A baby Potter. Draco had no idea why, but it was overwhelming to think of. He felt a swoop of adrenaline as he cast. A thin strand of silvery gas fluttered out of his wand and evaporated after a few seconds.
Yes!
Cried Potter, and squeezed Draco's hand. Draco laughed in disbelief.
That's the best I've managed ever. It's not enough, of course.
It's a start, and it means you can do it. Just need to keep practicing. Potter was still clutching Draco's hand and grinning. Draco's head felt light as air, and he couldn't stop looking at Potter's mouth. The bow curve of his lips. They looked soft. Draco realized he wanted to kiss Potter and... oh, fuck, he felt a bit dizzy, too.
I feel a little woozy now.
Right, yeah. Potter let go of his hand and clutched his elbow instead, directing him to a comfy chair. Probably the exertion. Sit here and I'll get some tea on. Draco relaxed and tried to put thoughts of Potter's lush lips out of his mind. After a minute, Potter came through with a tray. He passed Draco a mug of tea, decaf apparently, offered him a biscuit straight from the packet, chocolate digestives, and began chuckling.
What's so funny?
Oh, nothing really. Just remembered Allison commenting that it wouldn't be long before I persuaded you round for tea and Bickies, and she was right. She seems to be trying to pair us up. Draco wasn't sure how to respond to that and opted for,
You're right, that is hilarious.
Interestingly, Potter had gone a bit red and was now cramming a chocolate biscuit in his mouth. Draco sipped his tea, then said,
Owen and Allison are good sorts, aren't they? And I find it so refreshing that it's him having the baby. I never come across that in a heterosexual couple.
Potter swallowed his biscuit down. Right, me neither. Not sure if you know, but Allison is actually a trans woman. So she's biologically the mum, as in...
Oh, I see.
Yes, I get it. She's been pretty open about it with me and some of the others, so she won't mind me telling you. I noticed you don't tend to, mingle quite so much. Draco narrowed his eyes. Just because he didn't pry into strangers' lives like Potter didn't mean he was antisocial. But he mm-hmmed, and Potter went on. She told us that she was really keen to be the one to carry the baby, but that it just never happened for her. Thankfully, Owen was happy to carry instead, and Allison was still able to provide the, necessary conception ingredients.
That's so great that it worked out for them. They seem like such a lovely couple. I do hope we stay in touch with them after this.
We? You and me, like?
We all. As a group, all stay in touch.
Draco took a gulp of tea.
Right, of course. Speaking of, biological parents, I was thinking about your situation. I may be speaking out of turn here, but couldn't you just get a healer to perform a paternity charm on the men you've been with? Then you'd know.
I could. Draco didn't understand. And then he did.
You don't want to know.
Potter looked away, frowning. I know what you're thinking. It's unfair on the other guy.
I wasn't thinking anything. Though now you say it, if I were him, I suppose I'd like to know. But it's your body, your choice. You chose to have this baby, but you could have just as easily chosen not to go through with the pregnancy, and he'd have been none the wiser.
Yeah, and I can't claim the thought didn't cross my mind. Being a single dad isn't quite how I imagined my life going. Never mind the press are going to have a field day when it gets out.
I'm surprised it hasn't already. It's pretty obvious that's not just a beer belly.
Draco pointed with his half-eaten biscuit. Ah, yeah. I've been using glamour charms on my bump.
Me too. Much safer for the baby than disillusionment.
Draco stroked a hand over his abdomen as the baby shifted position.
But lots of people must know. Everyone in our class, for starters. Your trainees at the, whatever it's called, Aura Camp. How has it not leaked to the Prophet or Witch Weekly?
Oh, I've taken a 12-month sabbatical from teaching at the Academy. And for the rest of the people I come into contact with, well, Hermione taught me some modified Confundus charms. Potter grinned. If anyone tries to pass my news on, they'll suddenly find they've completely forgotten what they were about to say. Now it made sense why Draco kept neglecting to tell people about Potter.
That Granger's always been a wily one. Fierce, too, he said, rubbing his cheek.
She is. She's brilliant. The news will have to come out sometime, though. I can't confund everyone forever.
and I'm sort of hoping that whenever it does, my past, partners won't come knocking. I don't even know their names or remember what they look like. It could be anyone. Not judging here, but you do know a healer could tell you the date of conception, and you could simply use a pensieve to check who you were with that night. So it would be easy enough to find that out, if you wanted to.
That's just it, Malfoy, Potter said, his voice rising. I don't want to. You said it before, it's my choice. I don't want a relationship with them. I don't need financial support from them. I can do this on my own.
Bloody hell, you sound just like Hermione.
Cool it, Potter. I know you don't want a relationship with them, but what if your child does one day?
Oh, fuck off. Now you sound like Molly.
Draco stood up. Fine, I think I will.
Yeah, off you go. Take the huff. That's rich. Can't believe you're the one lecturing me on doing the right thing.
Of course, Draco said icily. How could I forget? Harry Potter can tell the right and wrong sort for himself. And that's just how you got into this mess, I expect. Thank you for the tea. I'll see myself out.
Draco couldn't believe he'd been thinking about kissing Potter a few minutes ago. What a fool he was. He strode out, all right, waddled out, to the front step, stuck his wand in the air, and moments later boarded the night bus and went home. Week 5. To say things were frosty between Draco and Potter the following week in class was an understatement. Draco had been so cross with Potter, the self-centered arsehole, for a good 48 hours. But then, at his healer appointment on Monday, he'd played things over in his mind while he'd listened to the reassuring gallop of the baby's heartbeat, and he wondered if he hadn't been a little bit judgmental, despite not meaning to be. Draco knew they were both hormonal and in complicated situations. Potter's reasons were his own, and none of Draco's business. But then Potter had been so rude, and it rankled. So at class on Friday, Draco made sure to sit as far away as possible from Potter. And at the break, he bolted to the hospital cafeteria and made do with their selection of snacks and beverages, which actually were preferable to Fortis's idea of refreshments. Draco quite enjoyed his galaxy bar and can of 7-Up, though it made the baby wriggle about inside him rather a lot. And to be honest, he didn't feel too guilty about treating himself, considering that every morning for the past 3 weeks, he'd been virtuously eating the organic muesli that healer Rorschach had recommended to him for his digestion. Awful stuff it was. It looked like it had been swept off the floor of Hagrid's hut and straight into his bowl, minus the hippogriff droppings, though they might have actually given it a bit of flavor. But, to be honest, it was marginally better than the prune potion, which made him gag. Luckily, after the break, there was no hideous roleplay or other exercise where they needed to pair up, so Draco was free to concentrate on the blessedly solo exercise of writing up his birth plan on the handy template Fortis had provided, without Potter's running commentary on things, which he'd noted was generally flippant or dismissive, or just downright negative. If he didn't know better, he'd think Potter didn't even want to have the baby. Draco clearly indicated on the form what sort of birth environment he favored, which pain relief he was happy to use and which he wasn't, what his preferred birthing positions were, and his preferences for cutting the cord. He overheard Potter at one point mumbling to someone, and when he snuck a glance, he was able to just hear him scoffing to Langston about mood lighting and aromatherapy. Draco grit his teeth. He was even more glad Potter wasn't sitting next to him. He wasn't in the mood to have to defend his choices of citrus blossom and clary sage candles, though Draco knew the very real uses and benefits of both, inside out. When he got to the part asking who his birthing partner was going to be, he paused. He hadn't really thought about who would accompany him. Well, that wasn't strictly true. He'd more avoided thinking about it. Not Gabriel, obviously, and certainly not his mother. She'd been surprisingly supportive of him, overjoyed, to be honest, that he was producing a grandchild. But he couldn't countenance putting her through the ghastly discomfort of watching her son give birth, not to mention his own at having her there. Perhaps he could ask Pansy, though he knew how squeamish she was. Or maybe he should just go it alone. He was a grown man. He could manage, surely. It might be nice to have someone, though, to hold his hand if things got scary,
and to share his joy when the baby was finally born. He decided he'd speak to Pansy during the weekend and broach the idea. Of course, it was when Pansy was visiting that the owl came. He hadn't even had a chance to get around to the subject of birth partnering. She was in the middle of pestering Draco for the umpteenth time about having a baby shower, which he vehemently did not want, when the bird swooped through the balcony's sliding doors and dropped the envelope onto his kitchen table.
"Sorry to interrupt, Pans," Draco said.
He wasn't sorry, not at all. He couldn't bear the thought of a horde of people coming over and cooing at his tummy.
"I'd better see who this is from."
"All right. Well, actually, I do need to get away. Meeting Millie at the Crumpled Horn in 10.
She gathered her things.
"Think about what I said, darling. I can get Theo to cater. He does the most gorgeous mini Victoria sponges, dusted with blue or pink icing sugar. And get this, these little cauldron cakes that he pipes into a meringue nappy to look just like..."
"Pansy, for the last time, I don't want a baby shower."
"We'll see,"
she sang as she skipped into the hearth after the flue powder she'd just thrown. Draco unfolded the parchment and smoothed it out on the table.
"Malfoy, I had actually meant to talk to you after class yesterday, but you'd left before I got the chance. I feel pretty shit about going off at you like that last week. I'm sorry about that. Hermione says I'm still working through all my feelings about having a baby. Ron says I'm just a moody prick. I think they're both right. Would you give me the chance to apologize properly? And I'd also love to see how you're getting along with the Patronus casting. I can come to you if you like, as it's not fair for you to have to be the one to make the trek across the city. H.J.P.
Draco sighed, both in exasperation and relief. He'd had a knot in his chest for the past few days, and though it was likely heartburn, in part, it felt a bit like worry, too. What was worse is that it had meant he'd been in no frame of mind to practice the charm. He wrote a reply inviting Potter over the following morning, and then focused on cleaning the flat from top to bottom. Even if it already looked tidier than Potter's place as it was, Draco felt compelled to make sure everything was spick and span. No doubt, the same instinct that saw him spending days and days turning the spare room into the perfect nursery, buying distressed white furniture, and using spells his mother had taught him to ensure everything was decorated just so. Nesting, Mother had called it, laughing, like Draco was a mama starling, but instead of using moss and feathers and leaves to line the nest, he was using knitted toys and pastel cushions and soft cotton blankets. Well, sod them all. It made him happy to do so. The doorbell went a good 5 minutes before the allotted time, and Draco dropped his wand in surprise. Once he'd completed the laborious task of picking it back up again, he gave himself a once-over in the hallway mirror. He was wearing a comfy wrap top made of a soft jersey material with a gray sash that tied at the side just above his waist, accentuating his curving abdomen. He'd tried baggy loose tops when he was first starting to show, but now that he was gargantuan, there was no point hiding it, so he'd decided he might as well just flaunt it. His hair was looking decent enough, too, and he quickly swapped his fluffy slippers for a pair of slip-on Vans. He let Potter in, and Draco hadn't even managed to lead him to the kitchen before Potter was apologizing and insisting that Draco was right to say what he thought, and that he actually appreciated Draco's honesty, and that he was going to think harder about whether he'd try to find out who the father was, and that he really, really hoped that they could stay friends, because he was beginning to like Draco quite a lot. It was an awfully great deal for Draco to process in the space of 60 seconds, and so Draco ended up saying,
"Well, I like you quite a lot, too."
And kicking himself, because, what the fuck, no he didn't. But Potter went all quiet then and said,
"Do you?"
And, well, Draco couldn't back down then. And he probably meant it, really, if he was honest with himself. So he said,
"Yes."
And before he knew it, Potter was crowding him back against the counter, and Draco let him, and he found that his fingers were grasping at the belt loops of Potter's jeggings to pull him closer, although it wasn't easy to get as close as he'd like, what with two bludger-sized bellies in the way. But they found an angle that worked, and then the air between them just seemed to disappear, and once their mouths came together, it was effortless. The kiss started slow and chaste, Potter's head tilting up slightly to meet Draco's. His lips were soft and sweet, and Draco's heart was pounding. Potter's woodsy, clean smell and his hands cupping Draco's face had Draco wanting more. He licked at the seam of Potter's lips, pressing his way inside, deeper, the hot slide of their tongues making Draco whimper in pleasure. As they kissed, Potter's fingers trailed down over Draco's throat to the open neck of his wrap shirt, dipping his thumb to caress the hollow of his throat. Then he bent and placed a lingering, wet kiss there, and Draco sank his fingers into Potter's messy hair and moaned. Potter's hand moved lower, and he found and loosened the tie of Draco's top. It fell away easily, exposing his pale skin, and Potter spread his palms against the expanse of Draco's belly. Potter pulled back a step to look at him, eyes dark.
"Fuck, look at you, Malfoy," Potter rasped, and Draco was so turned on it wasn't funny.
The feel of Potter's touch on his exposed, sensitive skin going straight to his dick. And then, right on cue, the baby kicked. Hard. Potter pulled his hands away.
"Ugh," Draco groaned. "Wow, that hurt."
"Bloody hell, yeah, I felt it. You've got a champion dueler in there, I'd say."
"Possibly," Draco chuckled. "Or maybe they think their father has gone quite far enough for today."
Potter's neck and ears were red.
"Yeah, I'm sorry. I just couldn't hold back. I haven't really felt like doing that sort of thing for months now. It's nice."
"It is nice," Draco agreed, and then he shivered and laughed.
"Was nice. Now I'm freezing."
He fastened his top up.
"Now, what I was going to ask you before you began ferociously snogging me was, would you like a cup of tea?"
"You snogged me back, you prat. And yes, as a matter of fact, I'd love one."
Potter rubbed at the back of his neck, and looked around, and then sat in a chair at the table.
"Tonic's tea cake?" Draco asked.
"Wouldn't say no," Potter grinned. "Nice place you've got here."
And so they drank tea, and ate their tea cakes, and smoothed out the foil into perfect squares. And then, after they cleared up, Potter stood behind Draco, arm around his middle, grounding him, while Draco cast, using the memory of the kiss they'd just shared. A silvery, wispy plume issued from his wand, dissipating after a few seconds, but Draco was ecstatic, and they practiced and practiced until Draco was able to hold and direct the shimmering gas. Later, after Draco had to sit down in elated exhaustion, and Potter had to go for a piss for the third time, and Draco heaved himself up and made more tea, Potter mumbled around a second Tunnock's tea cake that he'd really liked kissing Draco, and that he'd like to do it a bit more, if that was okay. Draco blushed, and he shuffled nearer to Potter on the sofa, and they sat facing each other, legs in the lotus position, and kissed. Draco kissed Potter on the lips, and along the line of his jaw, and Potter kissed the apple of Draco's cheek, and the corner of his eye, and the lobe of his ear, and they both had fingertips on each other's necks, and in each other's hair, until finally, Draco pulled back and just asked, though he felt shy about it,
"What are we now?"
"I don't know," said Potter. His face was open and kind.
"I don't know either," thought Draco.
And though they didn't decide that, there and then, they did agree to meet up again during the week for a smoothie at Energizing Elixirs and a good old gossip about their classmates, new and old. Apparently, Sam had let slip that his big brother Oliver was dating Puddlemere's coach, and one of Goyle's clients revealed that Terry Boot had had a facelift. And Draco went back to work after that lunch break with the biggest, stupidest smile on his face. But at least he now knew why he was unable to explain why to Swada. Week 6. At the next antenatal class, Draco arrived early and sidled right up to Potter, who was chatting to Jericho and Lawrence. He was feeling on top of the world, and actually enjoyed chit-chatting, finding Jericho's story about his past partner really moving, and even having to blink away a tear. Potter was brilliant, and so understanding and soft with Jericho, and Draco had a little realization, right there in the classroom, while Fortis was dinging his triangle and people were moving to take their seats, that he properly liked Potter now. A lot.
and that for the first time in 8 long months, he was daring to think about a future that might not involve him and his little bundle all alone, together against the world. That it might involve Potter in some way, and a Potter baby. And Draco felt those tears surfacing again as he sat down, and a whoosh of apprehensive joy as Potter squeezed his hand and silently asked with his eyes, green as shiny laurel leaves beneath long dark lashes, if Draco was okay. And Draco nodded and squeezed back.
Hormones, eh?
Potter whispered and rolled his eyes. Just before lunchtime the next day, the doorbell went at Draco's flat. Harry had said he might pop round that day, so Draco again checked his reflection before answering, and decided this time to leave the fluffy slippers on. He was sure Potter would find them cute. However, when he opened the door, his heart clenched painfully, then sped up so fast that his head swam. It was Gabriel, standing there in burgundy leather trousers and a tight white t-shirt, hair slicked back and holding the largest bouquet of flowers he'd ever seen, full of his favorite daffodils. Pipits, frosty snows, yellow oceans. Draco couldn't breathe.
"My God, look at you, you're huge," Gabriel said, gawking at Draco's bump.
Draco couldn't move his throat, let alone form words.
"Well, aren't you going to ask me in?"
Draco found his voice.
"What the fuck are you doing here?"
"It's still my flat."
"I said I'd buy it off you. Just tell me how much you want for it, and we can make this quick."
"Draco, baby, come on."
He spread his arms wide, and a few petals floated to the ground.
"I came to say I'm sorry. I was freaked out. I'm over it now. I just needed time."
"Needed time?"
"Needed time. Time is a few days. A week, maybe two. Not 8 months." "All right. I needed a lot of time."
"Yes, clearly. Time well spent in Agnes fucking Dane's knickers. Did you knock her up too? Is that why you're here?"
"Babe, calm down. I'm here now. That's the main thing. I'm here for you. And our baby."
Draco couldn't help the broken whimper that left his throat. Because that was all he'd wanted. That day 8 months ago when he'd broken the news to his boyfriend. He'd just wanted Gabe to be there for him. But he'd lost the plot at Draco, and buggered off, the coward. And Draco had been alone all this time, unloved. His knees buckled, and he collapsed heavily sideways against the wall. Gabriel dropped the flowers and crouched down to take Draco in his arms.
"I've got you, I've got you. Oh, honey, are you okay? Come here."
He hoisted Draco back up to standing, and helped him into the sitting room and onto the sofa. He was gentle and careful, and Draco felt like a shit telling him to get off and leave him alone, especially when Gabe said, "Shush," and "You're okay," and "I love you, babe," and cradled him like a mother osprey would a wayward chick. The familiarity of that voice and that touch weakened Draco. He could have this comfort. He could take Gabe back. It would be so easy. But, he reminded himself, Gabe had hurt him, fucked off with that bleached blonde clothes horse, right when Draco had needed him the most. And it was right when he was feeling rubbish and wondering how everything had gone to shit, and just resting his forehead against Gabe's chest, just for a moment, that Draco heard a solemn, "Oh," and looked up to see Potter standing there, very much at 6s and 7s, face like a kicked crop, and holding an 8-pack of chocolate frogs. Draco sprang away from Gabriel and stood up.
"Potter, you're... I... it's not..."
"You're Harry Potter," Gabriel said stupidly. "Draco's wanged on about you enough over the years. That scar, those green eyes, that scruffy hair. He never mentioned you were fucking well up the duff, too. What the hell?"
"Gabriel was just leaving," Draco announced.
"No, I wasn't."
Gabe stood up and put an arm around Draco's shoulders, pulling him close, then addressed Potter.
"In fact, you can be the first to know. Draco and I are getting back together. We're having a baby."
He put his other hand on Draco's stomach.
"As you can see."
Draco squirmed and shoved Gabriel off.
"What? No, we..."
"Right," Harry said, overloud.
Right, well, I'll leave you to that. Goodbye, Malfoy. He turned and began walking away.
Wait, Potter!
Potter looked back at him, eyes stony. No, I don't think I will. Apologies for interrupting. Best of luck to you both.
Potter, please, it's not what you think,
Draco pleaded, but Potter had already turned and was walking away.
Potter, wait!
Potter stopped and looked back at Draco, and a flicker of hope eddied through him.
There are some flowers on the floor out here, Potter said, voice flat. See you at class, I suppose.
And then he was gone.
What the fuck was that all about? Surely you're not shagging the dude who saved the whole bloody wizarding world?
Gabriel laughed meanly.
If that's even possible. The size of you both. Can two beached whales even find their dicks? Never mind stick them in each other.
Get out, Draco hissed. Just get the fuck out.
What? I was kidding. Can't you take a joke?
I don't want you here. I'm not getting back with you. Please, just go.
Don't be stupid, love. You need me. I'm the father of this baby. I have a right to...
You have a right to fuck all when it comes to me. You left. I told you I was having your baby, and you left. So I'm sorry, but you do not get to swan in months later and have me back.
Draco was shaking, but managed to walk to the hall. Gabriel followed.
I shall inform you when the baby is born, and we can make arrangements for visits and all that. But I neither want nor need you around.
Gabriel took a step towards him and adopted a hangdog expression that Draco knew was put on. He'd seen it enough times before.
Hey, I'm sorry, babe. You're right, I shouldn't have left. But it was a massive shock. Men aren't supposed to have babies. They're not made for it. It's weird.
As I explained to you at the time, Draco snapped, pure-blood male wizards have been giving birth for millennia, and they'll keep doing it for millennia more, whether you think it's weird or not.
I know, I'm sorry. I freaked out. And not just at that part. I'm a celebrity, remember? Young and desirable and relevant. A wifey and kids was not in the plan until much, much later. I'm not the domestic type, you know that.
I do know that, but it's neither here nor there. The fact is, I'm doing this alone, without you. Get that through your vacant skull, and get out. I can't bear to look at your Botoxed and overly contoured face for another second.
Gabriel recoiled and touched his face in surprise. Typical that the barb about his looks would be the only thing that would get to him.
This is my flat, you ungrateful bastard. I could turf you out.
Yes, you could turf us out, Draco said, cradling his belly. And if you do, we'll manage. That's your decision.
Draco could quite easily afford somewhere else, but he did love it here. It would be a shame to have to move. Gabriel glowered at him for several seconds.
You're bloody lucky I'm in the public eye. Last thing I need is muggle model Gabriel Whittaker throws pregnant boyfriend out on the street in tomorrow's issue of Witch Weekly.
So glad to be able to help maintain your shiny, sparkly reputation. You can see yourself out.
You've always been a stupid, spiteful bitch, Draco. I used to find it cute, but it's just fucking pathetic now.
Yes, I'm awful.
Draco wiggled his fingers dismissively in the air.
Bye-bye now.
As soon as Gabe slammed the door behind him, Draco slumped to the floor of the hallway and crouched there for a long time, hugging his belly. It was so warm against the undersides of his arms. Warm with life. The baby shifted around inside him, and he pressed his fingers into the small protrusion that appeared just to the left of his belly button. There was an answering nudge back. A tiny foot, or maybe an elbow. He had a part of Gabriel inside him, just as Potter had a part of some other man inside him.
Potter.
Draco needed to fix things, or to try at least. But right now, that felt too hard. He wasn't sure how to navigate this thing that had barely begun between them. And he didn't know if or how it would ever really work, them both being who they were. He honestly didn't know if it was worth the heartache of falling for someone all over again.
but he didn't want to be alone, either. He hugged himself tighter. This baby was his. That was all it needed to be. He wasn't alone, he told himself. He'd never be alone again.
"The two of us," he whispered.
Draco did owl Potter later that day, when he'd collected himself enough to think straight. He'd sat there on the oriental runner in the hall for almost an hour, too shaken to stand, running over the conversation with Gabe again and again. It had been a blow to see him again. Sure, he'd seen him in the magazines over the months, but being face to face again had been kind of shocking. The man looked bloody good. Fuck, he always looked good. That's why he was paid to model clothes. And it never failed to spark desire in Draco. But the feeling of betrayal and hurt won out, and Draco was weak with relief that he'd managed to stand his ground. After a cheese and pickle sandwich and two chocolate frogs, Potter had dropped the pack on the hallway table on his way out, and Draco had felt rather guilty opening it, but the baby's need for chocolate was simply too great. Draco wrote a letter to Potter. And then he read back over it, decided it was too overwrought, cast a swift errado, dipped his quill, and started again. Two more erasing spells later, his fourth iteration was just going to have to do.
Potter, I really must apologize for the scene at my home earlier today. If you'll allow it, I would dearly like to explain things to you in person. Please let me know when and where might be convenient. Yours, Draco Malfoy.
But there was no response to his owl that evening, or the following day. He considered calling to Potter's home, but he feared that might be presumptuous. They weren't a couple, not yet. He didn't know where they stood, if indeed they stood anywhere at all. He'd messed it up, before it had even had a chance to start. The thought seeped through him, cold and glutinous, that he could have had something with the man that had, let's face it, been his fascination for so many years, and true to form, he'd managed to let it slip through his fingers. Week 7. Draco threw himself into work the following week. It was his last week before his paternity leave started, so there was much to do. To his dismay, Swada had seen fit to hire her nephew Homer to cover his absence, and though the lad claimed to have achieved an O in his charm newts, he seemed incapable of picking up anything new without it being hammered into his brain with a bombarda. Draco had done all the hard work, creating Sense and Sensibility's new line of mood-altering fragrances. All Homer had to do was follow a few recipes. Draco had spent several nights writing up the ingredients and methods, and still this idiot was chopping instead of crushing and stirring the mixtures far too fast. So Draco worked hard to make as much stock as possible before he left. Swada was good to him, and she had fiercely defended him on numerous occasions from business partners and clients who took umbrage with working with a former Death Eater. He'd never forget the time she laced that bigoted tosspot Gertrude Philippe's cologne with stink sap. They heard he had autumn flies and blue bottles following him around the ministry for weeks, and was banned from sitting on the Wizengamot until he got the smell and the incessant buzzing sorted out. Class on Friday morning was an uncomfortable affair. He and Potter were paired up again for an exercise, and Potter was acting cool and detached. Not unfriendly in any way, just polite and aloof. And that was almost worse than if Potter had been grumpy. Draco made an attempt to whisper to him that he was sorry and could explain, and Potter firmly whispered back,
"Let's not, Malfoy."
Potter went through the motions of bathing and drying the baby doll with Draco, and even engaged with him, slightly gruffly, on the topic of what potion to use on their delicate skin, but refused to hold any sort of eye contact. Draco tried again to speak to Potter at the break, but he couldn't catch him alone. He was deep in conversation with Neil and Langston 1 minute, and then laughing with Francesco and Sam a few minutes later. As he drained the last of his tea, Allison sidled up to him.
"Merlin, what is it about Langston?" she said. "He's got such an air of authority. He's kind of..."
"Impressive. Captivating. Hot. That'll be the Shacklebolt genes. Everyone fancies Minister Shacklebolt."
"Very true," she laughed.
but when Draco didn't laugh too, she asked, "Everything all right with you? You look a bit frowny."
"Everything's fine, thank you. I was just hoping to speak to Potter for a moment, but he's in demand today."
"He's really such a good listener. Everyone just loves him."
"Yes," Draco said, a bit too sharply. "I suppose so." While thinking, "He doesn't seem to want to listen to what I have to say."
She furrowed her brow. "I thought you two were getting on famously. He told me last week he'd put your name down as his emergency contact on his birth plan."
"Did he?"
But that was who the healers would call if Potter went into labor unexpectedly or had any complications. That didn't make sense. Why not Granger or Weasley or Weasley's mother or anyone? Why him?
"I saw him holding your hand, too, the other day. I think you two are so lovely together, and it's so adorable how you call each other by your surnames."
Well, actually, I'm not sure Potter still wants..."
"Oh, I'm sorry. I'm interfering."
"No, it's fine. It's a bit complicated. We just... well, the thing is..."
Draco lowered his voice.
"Potter walked in on me and my ex having an argument. It was nothing, but he got the wrong idea and thinks we're getting back together, and he won't talk to me or let me explain. I think I've bollocksed everything up with him now. And, oh, Merlin, I'm sorry to offload this on you."
"Oh, Draco, don't be daft. It's okay," Allison said. "You know, I'm happy to have a little word in his ear if you want. Get him to talk to you."
"No, I couldn't ask you to do that."
"I'm a Slytherin," she said, tapping the side of her nose. "I know how to turn this in your favor. I can see how much you like each other. All it needs is some good old snake oil to grease the situation."
"You're a Slytherin? When were you at Hogwarts?"
"I think I was about 5 years ahead of you, so you'd probably not remember me. Plus, I've changed my name since then."
She grinned, the corners of her eyes wrinkling with good humor.
"Ah, right. Yes, of course. Well, it's good to meet a fellow Slyth. And, I suppose if you're speaking to Potter, you could put in a word. But don't say I put you up to it."
She rolled her eyes.
"What do you take me for? Salazar would turn in his tomb if I did something as gauche as that."
"Very true. Thank you, Allison," Draco said, and she winked at him.
The rest of the morning was spent taking a tour of the labor wards. Draco made sure to keep a distance from Potter, focusing instead on the rather Spartan beds and the scary-looking equipment, and the Chief Midwix's talk about the order of events once you arrived in hospital. Later, he spotted Allison talking to Potter in the corridor, who was scowling a little, but nodding at whatever it was she was saying. Then Potter shrugged at something and rolled his eyes, causing Allison to laugh loudly. And Draco dared to hope. He had to hand it to Allison. Whatever she said worked a treat. Potter owled him later that day, suggesting they go for a walk, which suited Draco, as he'd just finished up at work and felt like a bit of exercise. Swada and Augustus had surprised him with a pram-shaped cake for his last day, and he'd eaten a good third of it. Well, it was lemon sponge. They agreed to meet in Weaver's Fields by the sculpture. Draco got there first, and shifted from one foot to the other, until he saw Potter coming through the Kelsey Street entrance, not easy to miss in that oversized yellow jumper. Thinking it would be weird to just stare at Potter approaching, Draco looked down and studiously read the plaque of the sculpture, until Potter was close enough for Draco to turn and nervously say,
"Hi."
"So, you wanted to talk to me?" Potter began, hands shoved deep in the pockets of his gray jogging bottoms, looking up at the winding metal of the artwork. It was a tangle of balletic sports figures twisting and lunging around a helix, which was meant to represent ribbons of weaver's silk. Draco thought it looked a bit bleak.
"Yes, I... shall we go this route around the pitches and loop around?"
"Sure." They began walking. Draco wasn't sure whether to make a bit of small talk or just dive right in. Before he could decide, Potter took a deep breath, and Draco could feel the tiredness in his sigh.
"I'm sorry," he said. "You're sorry," Draco said. "Why?"
"For not replying to your owl. I just wanted a bit of time to think about things. I suppose I felt foolish for thinking that we were maybe going to
be a thing.
That's why I wanted to talk to you. Gabriel and I are not a thing. He came around trying to start things back up, assuming I'd fall back into his arms, and I got emotional for a few moments. That's when you walked in. And I threw him out after that. I don't want him.
It looked to me like you'd very much fallen back into his arms. You were cuddling and nuzzling him.
Yes, but...
And that's okay. You guys can do what you like. You were a couple for years. It's understandable you both still have feelings for each other. I'm happy for you. Well, happy-ish. He gave a listless chuckle.
Potter, you're not listening. I'm not getting back with Gabriel. Seriously.
They rounded a corner to a field where a group of teenagers were running and tossing a rugby ball to each other.
One of them shouted, "Knock on!"
And they all grumbled and stopped running.
Fine, okay. I mean, whatever. It's none of my business anyway.
Draco stopped, walking.
Potter.
Potter stopped a step late and turned to him.
What?
He said flatly.
I'd really like it to be your business.
He took a step forward and took Potter's hand. The sleeve of his jumper was a bit too long, and Draco shoved it up his wrist and linked his fingers with Potter's.
I know we never decided what we were, but I'd like us to still be something.
Really? Are you sure?
I am, but I'm more interested to know what you think.
Malfoy, I don't know what's for the best, if I'm honest. I haven't had a proper... Ugh, is there a less yuck word than relationship?
He screwed up his face. Okay, relationship. I haven't really had one of those since school. Since Ginny. And that went cold very quickly after the war. He was still holding Draco's hand, but he was straightening his fingers and relaxing them over and over.
I've just... Well, I went through a lonely, angry period a few years back. Angry at myself, mostly. Guilt, I suppose. That's what Ron says, anyway. It's a lot better now, but I feel it still, just simmering below the surface, driving me, motivating me, but not boiling over. It felt good to go out and meet blokes without any strings attached, ease the pressure I put on myself, and honestly a bit of rebellion. Being the quote-unquote savior of the world gets kind of tedious, and I've just not been interested in anyone enough to consider...
He waved his free hand about.
And anyway, I mean, what if they just want me because I'm Harry Potter the hero? What if I'm too much for them? What if they see I'm not a hero, just a boring bloke? Not someone worth having at all.
Draco pulled Potter towards a park bench and gingerly moved the empty iron brew can and crisp bag, depositing them in the adjacent litter bin.
Come, you dingus, let's sit down. Fuck all this whataboutery. Tell me what you want.
Potter sat. He didn't say anything for a few moments, but when he did, he looked right into Draco's eyes, and it looked like he'd just had an epiphany.
It's bonkers level of unbelievable to be saying this, but I think I want to date you, Draco Malfoy.
Draco laughed and felt something loosen in his chest.
It is rather insane, isn't it?
Potter said, yep, and gave him a bashful smile, and they sat in silence for a minute watching a sparrow hop about and peck at crisp crumbs on the path. Potter chuckled to himself.
Look at us, old school rivals, both heavily preggers, and somehow fancying each other, after all that's happened.
Instead of firing off hexes at each other, we'll be bonding over throwing off this baby weight,
Draco grinned.
Speaking of, we better get walking again. I had 2 cheese pasties for lunch.
Draco stood and helped Potter up.
I appreciate you hearing me out, and being honest with me.
Yeah, I properly went for it there, didn't I?
Potter grimaced.
You weren't expecting that much baggage dumped on you, I reckon.
No, not really. Is there much more of it? Only I'm not supposed to be doing any heavy lifting in my condition.
Oh, shut up, you.
Potter grabbed Draco's hand, and they set off at a brisk pace. By the time they reached the end of their loop around the park, their pace had slowed considerably, and they were both out of breath. And as usual, Draco's feet were killing him. They weren't far from Draco's flat,
So they walked the short distance along Bethnal Green Road, stopping briefly for a takeaway tea from Fakafi's. Along the way, Draco asked something that had been niggling him for a while.
Potter, just tell me if I'm overstepping here, but...
Oh, that doesn't bode well. Not well at all.
Well, you don't have to answer, of course. But I've noticed you don't seem overly into this pregnancy, or very excited by the prospect of a baby.
Potter groaned. Oh, Merlin, do I have to talk about this?
Of course not. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Nah, it's okay. I should stop avoiding talking about it. I don't know. I can feel the baby moving in me. I know it's in there. Bloody hell do I know. I just can't connect with it. In my head, it's always the thing inside me. It hasn't hit me, really, that this thing will be a little person with a gender and a personality and emotions. Malfoy, I can't even contemplate giving it a name. I don't know what's wrong with me.
There is nothing wrong with you. It sounds like you're just having a bit of trouble coming to terms with the reality of it.
Yeah, and I suppose not wanting to find the father is a symptom of that.
You're starting to sound like a mind healer now,
Draco said as they reached the door of the apartment block. I'm starting to sound like Hermione and Ron. They're always on at me.
Because they love you, Draco said. You'll come round in your own time, I'm sure of it, and you have lots of people who will help you out.
I hope so, Potter said. Draco sank down on the sofa, and Potter fetched a poof from the corner of the room. Put your feet up, mister. Draco did, and he closed his eyes and let his head flop back on the sofa. His ankles and toes were throbbing, and the baby seemed to be doing yoga sun salutations in his tummy. The wee thing had been non-stop today, moving and rolling about. It was as if it sensed that his emotions had been up and down and wanted to join in. "Seem to remember you mentioning you liked foot rubs," he heard Potter saying.
"Oh, adore them,"
Draco replied without opening his eyes. Draco felt his feet being gently lifted from their resting place and opened his eyes a crack, getting a brief glimpse of his swollen toes over his big round belly before Potter sat himself on the poof, nestled Draco's feet onto his lap, and softly started rubbing soothing circles into the aching pads of Draco's soles. Merlin, it was heavenly. Draco couldn't help but grumble when Potter stopped rubbing, but it was swiftly cut off as Potter's nimble fingers returned, and they felt slicker. He'd conjured some scented oil. Draco's expert nose could detect sweet almond and lang lang, and when Potter found a particular tender spot right in the arch of his foot, Draco groaned as knots of tension left his body.
That feels amazing, Draco sighed. Every pregnant person should have a Potter to massage their achy feet. It should be law.
I don't think I'd be all that keen on a wizarding decree forcing me to massage every single pregnant person's feet, if I'm honest. Potter laughed. He pressed his thumbs into the balls of Draco's feet, eliciting a hum of pleasure. I'm lucky my feet don't get overly swollen. It's the one symptom I seem to have avoided. I got all the rest, though. Langston was saying today that heartburn during pregnancy means the baby will be born with hair. If that's the case, I think I'll be giving birth to a puffskein. And Merlin, I had the worst morning sickness. It lasted for months. I could barely keep a thing down. And I never once got morning sickness. I was lucky, I suppose. To be honest, morning horniness has been my issue. Dear Salazar, still is. Draco laughed. Like you, I could barely keep a thing down, but it was a different thing altogether, which was easily dealt with until this auric-sized tummy got in the way. Potter was laughing, too.
Is that so? It's the worst. I'm constantly horny. Sorry if that's TMI. Pregnancy hormones are so weird.
Potter slid a hand up Draco's calf.
Perhaps you'd like me to rub something else, then.
Draco's pulse sped up. Merlin, anything got him hot these days, so his cock was already twitching just from Potter's words. He felt mortified. He hadn't meant to hint at that. However, it had been quite a while.
Fuck,
Actually.
Potter laughed. Surely the great Draco Malfoy isn't shy. He scooted the stool closer and slid both his palms along the tops of Draco's thighs. Draco's pants began to tighten as his cock started filling with arousal. Draco made a hapless little sound of want and let his legs fall open. Potter slowly slid a hand further up Draco's thigh, almost to the apex. His other hand stroked up and down Draco's swollen hip. Potter cocked an eyebrow.
Are you sure you're okay with me doing this? Salazar, yes. Just, if you don't mind, don't put too much pressure on, well, any part of my body.
Potter's fingers traced the crease between Draco's thigh and groin.
So I can't touch you? How's that gonna work, mate? You want me to wank you off with sexy magic vibes or something?
Draco snorted and then thrust against Potter, letting his erection introduce itself finally to Potter's hand.
Well, all right. Maybe some pressure would be fine. Just apply it judiciously.
Judiciously? Potter repeated in an amused tone as he carefully freed Draco's fully hard cock from his joggers. Then, Potter's hands were on him, gripping light and firm exactly where he needed it. Draco moaned low in appreciation. The oil from the foot rub was still very slick on Potter's hands, so they were able to glide smoothly over his sensitive skin, as Potter's thumb rubbed gently over the head of his cock. Potter began slowly stroking one hand after another down his shaft, in a never-ending sliding motion that was both calming and tormenting. Draco allowed himself to fall into the comforting rhythm of Potter's hands, and it was okay, just for this little slice of time, for it to be all about him and not the baby. To acknowledge that his body had been doing so much extra work and that it needed release. He could simply focus on physical pleasure and let Potter take care of him.
Almost there, Potter whispered, when, after several moments, Draco choked out low moans and soft murmurs of, Harry, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
I have you, Harry breathed, because fuck it, he was Harry now that he was touching Draco's cock so perfectly. And he was almost there, Merlin he was. Two more strokes, and he was spurting hot and messy over Harry's hand. He made a noise he wasn't aware he could make, husky and raw as he came. He could feel it everywhere, the euphoria, the relief, in his legs, in the muscles of his back, in his belly, finally, blessedly quiet. Harry leaned forward awkwardly and kissed Draco through his release, still stroking him carefully, and Draco clumsily returned the kiss until the haze of his orgasm had dimmed. Draco became aware of Harry's own erection, hard and hot, and craftily rubbing against his hip. Draco pushed his hip back against it as best he could, but the angle was awkward, and so he pulled away.
I'd do you too, Potter. Harry.
He wasn't sure why, but he felt shy saying Harry, even though he'd just come all over him.
But I'm completely shattered, limp as a noodle. Feel free to continue.
He gestured down at Harry's tented joggers.
Against me.
Shit! Harry was breathing heavily, and he stood up, palming his bulge. If I wasn't so bloody and gainly, I'd have wanked us both at the same time. Wait, I know. Put your hand here. He took Draco's hand and placed it, palm open against his crotch. Draco marveled at how hard he was, and how big, and gave an appreciative squeeze. Harry groaned and moved forward so that the back of Draco's hand was against the sofa next to his hip, trapped between soft upholstery and Harry's hard-on. Then Harry began grinding into Draco's palm, and all Draco had to do was squeeze a bit and rub a bit and lock eyes with Harry, incredible Harry, as he gave in to his own pleasure, rocking into Draco's hand again and again and again, and never breaking eye contact, until he finally threw his head back and darkened his gray joggers with cum right there in front of Draco. They fell into each other on the sofa, laughing after a few cleaning charms had been cast, still a bit sweaty, a bit flushed, but giddy with the sheer amazement of it, the relief of finally connecting on that weird and thrilling, we just made each other come level, a breathless freedom, cumbersome and clumsy as it was, but just what they both needed.
"Fuck, that was wicked," Harry laughed. "But I could go for a nap now."
Draco pulled himself free of Harry and curled over onto his side, pressing his head silently into Harry's rising and falling chest, cuddling in. A comfortable silence descended, and he slid his hand down Harry's stomach, fingers gentle, and closed his eyes, overwhelmed with exciting new feelings for Harry, and also with tiredness. Week 8. Draco visited Harry during the week, bringing takeaway pizza and non-alcoholic fizz, and they kissed in the hall and ate the pizza in the kitchen and listened to 90s grunge in the sitting room and talked for hours lying on the bed in Harry's room. And despite kissing a good deal more between Harry's sheets, all they ended up doing there was sleeping. Before drifting off, Harry lazily mumbled,
"You're beautiful, Draco. Can't wait until we can fuck properly."
Which was the last thing a continuously aroused Draco needed to hear. But he settled for kissing Harry so extremely thoroughly that he was unable to open his eyes for a few seconds afterwards, a strange joy having taken root in his heart, and tentatively stretched its green stems and buds out through his whole body. And then Draco hoarsely whispered,
"Good night, Harry,"
before he rolled his big self over and let sleep claim him. On Friday morning, the sun shone brightly, birds sang, and despite his pudgy ankles, Draco had a skip in his step arriving to class. But when 9 o'clock came and went and there was no sign of Harry, Draco felt nervy. Fortis said he hadn't sent a message or heard from Harry. It didn't make sense. They'd talked earlier in the week about this being the last class for them both, and that they'd go for a smoothie afterwards to celebrate. So where was he? By 9:30, Draco was getting worried. With every minute that ticked by, the magic in him was rising and rising. He could feel it crackling in his nerve endings, surging through his arteries, and he was struggling to concentrate on what was being said around him. At exactly 9:42, Draco clenched his fist around his wand, and something, a lamp, shattered in the room, causing Owen to yelp beside him. Draco excused himself to the loo. He needed to find out if Harry was okay. He couldn't apparate, and walking to Harry's place was too far. He wondered if he could contact Harry somehow. Did the hospital have an owlery? But that would take too long. A patronus, perhaps. He could ask someone to send a patronus. He was loath to go back into the class and admit to them he couldn't do a full one properly. But what choice did he have? He wavered for a few seconds and then decided to give his patronus another try. For Harry. He stood in the empty men's room and concentrated hard. He could do this. He thought of Harry's smiling face, Harry telling Draco how much he liked him, and he felt the happiness rise within him. Not wanting to waste that feeling, he cast,
"Expecto Patronum."
For a split second, nothing happened, and Draco felt like he was going to be sick. But then a bright blue light surged out of his wand, brighter than any lumos, and began to take shape. It was a slim, elegant dog, a greyhound, he thought. Actually, maybe a bit smaller, more like a whippet. Either way, it was gorgeous. He was so in awe of the fact that he'd managed it, and so transfixed, watching it scamper about playfully, that he almost forgot what he was doing it for. He cautiously addressed the shimmering whippet.
"I need you to bring a message to Harry Potter."
And the dog stopped spinning in circles and padded over to him, nudging his nose at Draco's hand, and then looking up at him expectantly.
Harry, it's Draco. I need to know you're okay. Please let me know if you need help."
The dog barked silently, then loped away and vanished seconds later. Minutes went by, and there was no response. A tap dripped rhythmically, and he focused on the sounds outside the room to distract himself, identifying which voices were patients and which were healers. How long should he wait? He couldn't stay in the loos all day. And though he was sort of sure Harry's patronus would find him if he moved locations, he was worried about risking it. After 8 more minutes passed, he gathered his courage and decided to try something else. He cast again, but managed only a small wisp. Trying not to be discouraged, he concentrated on the feeling of Harry's kisses,
while using the same memory as earlier, and cast once again, and was shaky with relief when the whippet came bounding from the end of his wand.
"Granger," he cried desperately, "it's Draco Malfoy. I'm worried about Harry. He hasn't shown up to antenatal class, and I'm unable to apparate or flu. Do you know where he is? Is he all right? Appreciate any help you can give."
A small flame of humiliation burned his pride to have to send this to her, but he was overwhelmingly sure that Harry was worth it. It was funny the things he'd do for... what? Draco wasn't sure. Again, he waited. 11 long minutes passed, and then a shimmering otter appeared. It opened its little mouth, and Granger's voice came out of it, priggish as always, but laced with worry.
"Malfoy, it's Hermione. Thanks for the message. Got a hold of Harry's neighbor, Maureen, who says he's been taken to St. Mungo's. Poisoning, she thinks. I'm on my way there now."
Poisoning? Cold dread seeped into Draco's chest, and his mind whirled with what could have possibly happened. What he did know, however, was that Harry was here in the building. He made his way as quickly as possible to reception, arriving sweaty and flustered and very fucking stressed, and demanded directions to the poisoning department from the poor welcome wizard on duty. When he finally found the correct ward, a Mediwix with a large badge stating, "Duty Matron, Madame Clara Kite," blocked his entry, informing him visiting hours were strictly 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., and Draco took no shame in shoving his sizable bump at her and announcing that he was Harry Potter's emergency contact. She seemed highly displeased and had the cheek to ask, "Who? You?" disbelievingly, but upon checking the paperwork, was unable to bar Draco from entering the ward, and thus grudgingly showed him in. Madame Kite walked past several beds where patients were lying, most of them asleep or on magical drips, but some staring curiously at Draco. Reaching the end of the room, she pulled back a curtain sharply, and Draco's whole body went cold. Harry was lying unconscious on a bed, looking smaller and paler than he'd ever seen him, with bandages wrapped around both his legs and a massive purple bruise across his brow. Yellow magic swirled around his exposed abdomen, slow and sickly. The air smelled heavy with frankincense. Draco rushed to the bedside and grasped Harry's limp hand. He struggled to form thoughts and turned to the matron.
What happened? Will he wake up? What about the baby?
He should be all right, Mr. Malfoy, she replied, and Draco wasn't sure how she knew who he was. But then, his mugshot had been in the papers rather a lot following the war. There's a charcoal and fluxweed poultice under the bandages that's working away, drawing the poison out, and we're monitoring the baby while that happens. Once that's done, and we're sure she's safe and well, we'll treat Mr. Potter's head injury, and hopefully he'll come round shortly afterwards.
But what happened? How did he get poisoned?
A rare type of devil's snare.
She lifted Harry's other hand and pointed her wand at his wrist. A small red glow pulsed in time with Harry's heartbeat.
One that secretes poison as it suffocates, she added,
then looked at her watch as she counted the pulses.
Oh, shit! Devil's snare! He could have been...
Draco trailed off, unable to say the word. Killed. Madame Kite dropped Harry's hand, and it flopped lifelessly onto the stiff bedsheet.
A neighbor found Mr. Potter out cold in his back garden. She'd heard a shout. The devil's snare was wrapped around his legs, and it delivered quite the nasty little poison. It likely pulled him off his feet, and that's how he banged his head. He's lucky the tendrils hadn't wound around his belly. They'd have squeezed so tight that the baby...
She spotted Draco's expression and trailed off.
Salazar,
Draco whispered, tears springing to his eyes. His skin prickled all over. They could have both died. He clasped Harry's hand tighter and willed him to be okay.
Anyway, the neighbor was able to cast bluebell flames at the plant's roots, and it shrank back. Good thing Mr. Potter got knocked out, really, as it meant he didn't struggle and tighten the vines around him. Plus, the poison has strong hallucinogenic properties, so he's better off tucked up here in bed than wandering around the neighborhood thinking he's Emmerich the Evil.
Yeah.
Draco looked at Harry's lifeless form.
Better off.
Then something struck him.
Wait, earlier. Did you say she? Is it a girl?
Goodness, I suppose I did. Did you not know? I noticed the sex when Hela Smythe scanned Mr. Potter earlier, when he was brought in.
No, neither of us knew. Harry wanted it to be a surprise.
I do apologize. I'll make sure not to tell anyone else.
Not to worry. Please, just... I just need Harry and...
Draco lowered his voice to a whisper.
His little girl, to be okay.
Of course, we're doing all we... Harry!
Draco and Madame Kite looked up to see a mass of brown curls and ministry robes rushing towards them. Fabulous. He'd completely forgotten Granger had said she'd be coming. Granger stopped short as the matron stepped in front of her.
I'm very sorry. Visiting hours are between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Draco turned his head to hide his amusement.
Ah, Madame Kite,
Granger said, peering at the woman's badge, and then said,
Clara,
in an insufferably obsequious tone, which garnered an unamused move from the matron.
I'm Harry's best friend. I've been here many times in the past when he's been injured. I'm sure you... So you'll know the rules by now. You can return this afternoon.
She began ushering Granger towards the door, all the while Granger pleading. Draco's petty thrill at her being turned away soon turned sour when he caught the look of devastation in Granger's large brown eyes. Bollocks, he thought. Bollocks. He stood up.
Wait.
They turned to look at him.
Granger, she's with me.
Miss Kite raised an eyebrow.
Hermione Granger is here with Draco Malfoy. I find that hard to believe.
Draco looked at Granger, who was hesitating, her mouth open as if to say something. Then she nodded and said,
Yes, Draco and I are both here together, for Harry.
The matron heaved a harried sigh, pursed her lips and said,
All right, then.
And Granger didn't need to be told twice. She was over to Harry's other side in a shot. Madame Kite adjusted a few spells and said,
Right, I need to go do my rounds. There's a buzzer there you can use to summon me if his condition changes.
When she was gone, Granger said,
Thank you, Malfoy. I was so worried about Harry and the baby. What on earth has he gone and done this time?
Draco explained what the matron had told him about Harry's little accident, and Granger nodded along, her frown growing deeper.
Why did he have Devil's Snare in his garden at all? She said. It's not a common garden plant. It's so dangerous. I don't get it.
Nor me. It seems a bit reckless, even for him.
Granger looked at him then, gimlet-eyed.
So, you and Harry, then?
Draco hesitated.
Well, we,
Don't worry. Harry told us he started seeing you.
Draco breathed out in relief. Granger picked at the sheet on the bed, then smoothed it out.
I have to confess, I was rather concerned about it. Well, I thought he could do a lot better than the person who'd tormented him for 7 straight years.
6, actually. I hardly saw him in 7th year. Not many tormenting opportunities.
Her mouth twitched at the side.
True. Harry was rather preoccupied with other things that year.
Assume you're referring to that whole saving the wizarding world from evil thing? Rude of him, really. I felt very neglected.
Granger snorted.
Merlin, you've got the same black humor as he does anyway. I think I understand why he's with you. And I can't argue that you don't care about him.
Draco nodded.
No one was more surprised than me that Harry showed an interest.
Granger looked like she was having some sort of internal debate, chewing on her lip and twisting the sheet. Eventually, she said,
He told me he'd finally found someone that he wanted to spend more than the night with, someone he thought would be a worthy father to his child, that he wished was the father.
Draco gasped and felt something pulling his heart tight. He had no idea Harry felt that way.
And forgive me, Granger went on, but I've completely glossed over the fact that you're having a child of your own very soon. Congratulations, Malfoy. Draco, I really am so pleased for you both.
I don't know what to say, or what I've done to deserve all this kindness. I really was terrible to you all.
Just look after him.
She looked close to tears.
Ron and I have been so worried.
We've hardly begun. But I'm really... Well, I like him so much. I never dreamed he'd like me back. I'll never do anything to hurt him.
She reached across Harry's considerable form and squeezed Draco's hand. Her skin was warm and dry.
Malfoy, look! The magic around Harry's tummy, it's changed color. And sure enough, the mist surrounding Harry's bump had turned a calm blue-green and was barely moving anymore.
What does it mean? Draco asked. Ew, and the bandages, he added, noticing they were soaked with a dark purple ooze. We ought to call for Madame Kite.
Granger buzzed through, but before the matron had time to get there, Harry's eyes were fluttering open. They both squeezed his hands on either side.
Harry!
They said in unison.
Draco,
he rasped, smiling weakly and gripping his hand.
Miney.
Yes, we're here, said Granger, shuffling closer to him.
The baby, is it okay?
He tried to sit up, rather unsuccessfully.
We think so,
Draco said, getting a pillow to prop him up.
The matron should be on her way.
Ugh, what's all that gooey material on my legs?
That's the drawn-out poison that you managed to get yourself stung with,
Draco said.
You gave us such a bloody scare, you git. And made me miss the last baby class, including a talk on my baby's first bowel movements. I may never forgive you.
Harry guffawed, color returning to his cheeks.
Where's Ron, then?
Harry asked, squinting around. Granger passed him his glasses. Too busy apprehending criminals to come running when his best mate keels over for the zillionth time. Granger laughed through a sniffle.
He sends his love, and a very large eye roll.
Madame Kite entered the room just then.
Ah, good, you're awake.
She began casting, muttering incantations and gliding her wand in the air over Harry's legs and stomach. She vanished the gooey bandages, declared the poison to be all gone, then dealt with the bruising on Harry's forehead with an efficient swirl of her wand.
Just take this replenishing potion, one dose now, one tonight before bed, and one in the morning, and you'll be right as rain.
She handed him the bottle and said sternly,
You're free to go, and we'd really prefer not to see you again in here until that little one's ready to come out.
Harry thanked her, and she left. Draco immediately threw his arms around Harry and hugged him. Tight, but not too tight. He didn't want to hurt him. But Harry squeezed back, and Draco was overcome with relief that he really was okay. Reluctantly, he stepped back to let Granger smother him in kisses, too. On questioning, it turned out Harry had been delivered a large potted flitter bloom a few days earlier, with a note saying it was an early birthday gift. Or at least, he'd thought it was a flitter bloom. Harry said he put the pot plant in the garden next to his busy lizzies and spider flowers and thought no more of it. He often got weird and wonderful gifts from his, inverted commas, fans, he said, and he actually mimed the inverted commas. And when I went out to the back with my cuppa for a spot of morning sun, I noticed it had grown to 3 times its size. I went for a closer look, and that's when it lunged at me. I don't remember much more, except for the sound of my favorite harpy's mug smashing on the patio tiles. Bloody loved that mug.
You're the mug, Harry, Granger chided. What have I said to you about just blindly accepting gifts? You could have been very badly injured. The baby, too.
Draco was inclined to agree with her. Draco helped Harry to get organized, and then they met Granger outside the hospital. She was waiting on the curb next to a black muggle car.
I've called you a cab, she said, opening the door of it.
She helped Harry clamber in the back, and then Draco, too. It smelled of stale cigarettes and beer and weak disinfectant, and Draco reached into his shoulder bag for his small atomizer of eau de richesse and spritzed it discreetly around him. The cab filled with the aroma of sandalwood and Tahitian vanilla. A vast improvement. Granger relayed the address to the cabbie through the window, and then passed some muggle money to Draco, wagging a finger at him.
Look after that idiot, will you? And yourself. I want to know the very second there is an indication of either of those babies arriving.
Draco didn't dare argue, feeling humbled that she cared enough about him to scold him like that. Her face softened to a smile.
Thanks again, Malfoy. I mean it.
She closed the door and waved, and as the car pulled out into the mid-morning London traffic, Harry rested his head on Draco's shoulder, and Draco thought that things were going to be all right.
I've been thinking about it.
And you and Molly, you were right, Harry announced when he came downstairs after a 3-hour sleep.
Draco had busied himself while Harry was taking a recuperating nap, and set about the task of clearing up Harry's house and making it more baby-friendly. He used all the spells he could think of, and a fragrant room spray of his own design, to declutter and clean, and before long had the place looking, and more importantly smelling, fresh and welcoming.
Right about what?
Wow! Look at the place, Harry said, only just noticing. You did all this. It's brilliant. He strode over to Draco and embraced him, angling his face upward towards Draco's, asking silently for a kiss. Draco didn't deny him. They lingered together, cupping each other's faces, and kissing and smiling and rubbing noses. Then Draco asked again,
What was I right about?
You said the baby might want to know who his other dad is some day. And, well, it's true. I'd jump at the chance to get to know my parents if they were still alive. Even if I found out I was the product of a one-night stand. I wouldn't care. I'd want to know.
Oh, Harry,
Draco said, moving aside a lock of hair to kiss the scar on his brow. I'll find out who the father is, if I can. I might just keep the information to myself for a bit, though. Do you think that's selfish?
Not one bit. And anyway, even if it was, you've more than earned a bit of selfishness.
I'll tell the bloke, of course, but maybe when I'm settled with the new baby. Take it from there.
That is perfectly reasonable, said Draco. What is not reasonable, however, is that scare you gave me this morning.
Yeah, sorry about that. That sort of shit happens to me a lot. You'll get used to it.
Absolutely not. My nerves couldn't take it. I'll be conjuring a Patronus every day to wrap around you and keep you out of harm's way.
Harry laughed. That's your parental instincts kicking in already.
Psh, Draco said, rolling his eyes.
You're going to be an amazing dad, Harry said then, and Draco shrugged.
I'm not confident of that, but I will try.
You are everything your father isn't, Draco. Caring, patient.
Most of the time.
Ow! I've just had an injury, you git. You can't pinch a convalescing patient. As I was saying, you're patient and smart and have a cracking sense of humor. And you're very fucking fit.
Are you trying to say my father is ugly?
No, Harry laughed. No. Although, I suppose he is sort of hot in a way.
Oh my God, shut up. This is getting worse.
Draco pulled away from him.
Now drink your tea. I have to show you something. I hope you'll like it.
Intriguing, Harry smirked, sipping his tea. Draco led Harry by the hand to the guest bedroom. Earlier, Draco had explored the house and finally found where Harry had unceremoniously dumped all the baby clothes and bedding and rattles and, of course, all the blue knitted things. He was quite amused at how wrong Molly had been about that. Everything was a jumble of boxes and badly folded fabrics, and there had been no attempt to make it look like anything other than a spare room. So he'd used a little magic, bit of transfig here, a few charms there, and made a fairly decent fist of it, if he said so himself. He covered Harry's eyes as they walked in, and then took his hand away and said,
Ta-da!
It looks perfect, Draco, Harry said as he walked around the room. He trailed his fingers along the light ash of the cot rail, then picked up a bright fabric-covered rattle. A humongous grin burst across Harry's face that he made no effort to hide, and he smoothed his palm across the swell of his stomach and said, I'm having a baby, like it was the best thing in the world. And Draco said,
Yes,
and smiled back at Harry, just as big and unselfconsciously, because actually it was. I think I'm starting to look forward to this now.
We're about to be parents, Harry.
Harry gave him a look he couldn't decipher.
What is it?
The way you said, we, as if we'll parent together?
I did.
Draco took Harry's hand.
I know it's quick, but I think we'd do a good enough job. Let's do this together.
Things might be pretty mental for the four of us, Harry mused.
Mm-hmm.
Draco kissed the tips of Harry's fingers and pressed them to his own stomach. Harry's voice lowered to a whisper,
But we'll all be good to each other, okay?
We will.
Draco's stomach growled.
Starting with you making me some lunch. I'm famished. I'll have you know I'm eating for four now.
Laughing, they made their way to the kitchen, and while Harry made cheese on toast for them both, with a dash of Worcestershire sauce and an extra handful of grated Cornish cheddar for Draco, seeing as he was eating for four and was also a bit addicted to cheese, Draco thought about how lucky he was to have bumped into Harry after all these years and found a warm, caring friend in him and someone to share this new chapter of his life with. And actually, he was a little bit addicted to that, too. The end. But of course, that wasn't the end. That's merely how it all began. The story of Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy, and how neither of them ever felt alone again. On the 1st of August, the day after a most subdued birthday party for Harry, Phoenix Malfoy and Holly Potter both decided it was time to enter the world, at 9:05 in the morning and 1:20 in the afternoon, respectively. Pansy did a sterling job as birth partner for Draco, only fainting twice, and not minding in the least when Draco swore blue murder at her. Pansy never did manage to throw the baby shower she'd been planning, what with Draco and Harry hardly spending a minute apart in the run-up to the birth. But she plotted with Hermione and Allison, all three fast friends since they bonded at St. Mungo's over being birth partners to three demanding men, and threw a surprise party for them when the babies were 4 weeks old. Draco's flat was heaving with all their friends and family, as well as their classmates and their new babies, and to Draco's surprise, he had a brilliant time showing off little Phoenix and telling everyone who'd listen what a good baby he was, not to mention handing him off to various people while he ate baby-themed cupcakes and handfuls of palm bears and bitched to Owen and Sam about the 3 a.m. feeds. On their baby's first birthdays, Draco and Harry finally moved in together, after months of arguing over whose place was more suitable. Harry said Draco's flat was too small, and Draco said Harry's house was too grotty. And the only way to settle it was just to buy that house with the magnolia tree and the big open-plan kitchen in St. John's Wood that they both liked. Once settled, the battle soon began over who would carry their next child. And, long story short, that's how Remus Potter Malfoy and Vincent Malfoy Potter ended up being born the following May, just 2 weeks apart. All because neither man wanted to give an inch. It seemed some things would never change.